Hey, let's start the show.
It's May 16th, 2013. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith, sitting at the table directly to my left in a place that you cannot see because we are doing an audio-only podcast today, Norman Chan.
Hello.
How are you doing, Norm?
I am exploring the world.
You're doing that using some sort of Microsoft tablet technology?
Yes, and some sort of Google-provided mapping technology.
So hold on, you're using the Google Earths with IE10?
No, Chrome.
Oh, Chrome. Does Chrome support touch now on x86?
Chrome on Windows does not do pinch to touch or pinch to zoom because Microsoft has not gotten its what do they call it?
APIs?
There's a certain API that they did with Windows 8. Something points, touch, some touch
points. A million points of light?
Something where it combines touch and mouse and everything into this generic term, and because it control IE, it works in IE, and then they got it certified for WebKit, and then Google got rid of WebKit or is leaving
WebKit.
Forking it to something else, and they just have submitted their new API. So maybe soon, but in some applications, web applications, you can still do, it will recognize multi-touch and pinch, such as mapping apps.
Well, because Chrome supports some multi-touch on OS X with the trackpad. Like, you can do swipes and stuff, which is kind of nice. Directly to your left, sitting quietly and waiting to be introduced properly.
I know how to behave.
I didn't say your name yet. Wesley Fenlon. How you doing, Wes?
Hey, Will. I'm doing pretty well.
It's good to see you. I'm just messing with you.
You too.
Realize. Yeah. I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad I'm here, too.
I'm happy to have you here.
I'm glad I'm here and not with Matt Braga at Google I.O.
Googlio?
Is that the new name?
I just made that up just now. Googlio.
There were so many people outside of Google I.O. at the Moscone Convention
Center. You mean Googlio?
Google I.O. yesterday, holding clutching large white Chromebook Pixel boxes.
You know, if you wanted to do some real quality muggings, the place to do it and to get a bunch of $500,000 items.
Not a cop in sight.
Yeah, is just wait at the Fifth and Mission garage.
I did stand in the corner while waiting for friends, also waiting to see if anyone with Google Glass would walk by, so I asked to use them, and no one with Google Glass walked by.
At the keynote, all the pictures I saw from people waiting in line to get into the keynote, in case you didn't know, Google I.O., Googlio, is live today, yesterday, and I guess tomorrow, right? It goes one more day.
Their big event for the year,
it's
I guess.
It's their developer conference. So, theoretically, all the people who develop applications for Google platforms like Chrome OS and Android, as well as services that use Google services, come in to learn about the new stuff that they're going to be able to do in the next year.
It's kind of not as much a press event as it is a developer event.
Absolutely not a press event. I mean, in case you weren't watching, if you did watch the keynote yesterday, we learned very quickly that it was not a press event because the first hour was about new APIs and image formats and video formats and stuff that normal human beings probably don't care about at all. But the pictures I saw from people waiting in line were all of middle-aged white guys wearing Google glasses because the people at Google I.O. last year, Googlio, were the first ones who were able to buy the Explorer edition for $1,500. And those have actually started shipping. Those people have those now. That's where your Robert Scobles and your
How uncomfortable do you think Larry Page was when Robert Scoble declared himself a glasshole to a million people watching?
There was a lot of uncomfortable in that. By the time they got to the Q&A, it was only 45,000 on the stream I was watching.
He said when Larry Page went on stage, a million people were watching.
So, yeah, I can't imagine that was the way he wanted to start that Q&A. Hi, I'm one of the first glassholes.
That's exactly what he said.
His response was, Larry Page's response was really good. Hey, I didn't really appreciate that picture of you in the shower. Because I don't think anyone really appreciates it. I actually would rather just not talk about Scopel if we can.
Moving on.
Yeah. I wanted to know what happened if you walked around. I'm bummed you didn't see anybody with glasses on, but can you, like, I watched the video with Fred Armisen, who did a Saturday Night Live skit a few weeks ago about the Google glasses. And one of the guys from Engadget did an interview with him where you got Tim to actually Stevens. Try them on. Tim Stevens did.
Yes. I think I think the Fred Armisen bit on SNL was really funny.
Yes.
I think getting the idea of getting Fred Armisen to put on Google Glass on camera was a really good idea. Giving celebrities and people, interesting people, Google Glass is the new giving interesting people the Oculus Rift to try.
I think we were the only ones who did that, in fairness. Well, and that grandmother.
But I don't think Fred Armisen was prepared, and I think that viewers wanted him to be on the whole time.
They wanted a character from Portland.
Yeah, they wanted the funny. Yeah.
They didn't get the funny, and Fred Armisen, in lieu of the funny, tried to provide some like analysis.
I thought it was really informative, actually. I thought that was... I thought it was interesting to see.
I think it was like, it was the wrong format for the wrong format for that actor.
I thought it was interesting to see what a normal human being who may not be totally dialed into technology world thought about the kind of initial experience
then
with those glasses.
Don't give it to Fred Armisen, because then you have the...
He's a human being. He is a human being.
But then
of view.
Fred Armisen brings along the expectation of humor and funny.
So if you give it to Adam Sandler, you wouldn't expect it to be funny.
Exactly.
Okay.
Fred Armisen should have done Obama while he was wearing Google Glass.
Like William Gibson wearing Google Glass.
Yeah.
Super interesting. Yeah, that's true. I would totally love to hear what he had said, and he had lots of things to say. But Fred Armisen, especially in the context of him having already done that parody video on SNL, it almost like, oh, I'm sorry I made fun of this. I guess there are real people who are working on this. Like, it was almost all apologetic, and it made it very uncomfortable.
Hmm. He didn't do that with the factory workers in China, though.
Nope.
After that.
Also, Fred Armisen's a racist.
Why? He's from Eastern Europe. Can he be a racist?
Absolutely. I think everybody can be a racist.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good point.
Equal opportunity.
Yeah, come okay. On. Fairness. Anyway, the thing I'm most curious about is like how that actually works. The thing that was interesting to me about that Fred Armisen video, where I was going with this is when Tim Stevens was asking questions and telling him how to use the glasses by saying glass on,
okay glass,
whatever the keyword is, he was actually turning on the glasses that Fred Armisen was wearing inadvertently. And this raised a lot of potential for the lines outside keynotes at Google I.O. where there's a couple of 50, 60 people wearing these glasses at once. And I wonder if you can trigger... it seems like you probably can't because they key it to your voice. But it would be fascinating to know if you can trigger someone else's Google Glasses, because you could do horrible things to them.
It would be a whole lot of fun, yeah.
Yeah, but there's more than one interface method for Google Glasses.
But you tap the thing, you swipe,
swiping on the sides. Yeah, stroke your temple.
I just... Seeing those pictures makes me... pulls into sharp relief. What an... Like, I know everybody... The prevailing conversation on the topic is, would you actually wear these in public? And I
would much rather wear what the Explore Edition looks like than what their early prototypes
look
like.
No doubt. But I mean, I think about the early days of smartphones, because I had an early Windows mobile smartphones, pocket PCs, all that stuff. And it was such an unusual thing. I would have never pulled it out when I was sitting on the subway or waiting for a train or, you know, out in the street corner or something like that. And now, like in six, seven years, like the feeling about that has completely changed. You know, when one person pulls out their phone, you're standing at a bus stop, everyone else reflexively pulls out their phone now. And I wonder how long it's going to take for the glasses to kind of, and seeing the crowd at Google I.O. didn't make me feel like, oh, this is probably going to be a thing. In fact, actually, I kind of went the opposite way. They're weird.
The privacy concerns are definitely, like, that has the potential to be way more of an issue than anything with smartphones did, I think, in kind of turning public opinion away from those.
Well, Braga posted a possibly apocryphal story that was related to him about someone in the men's room saying, okay, glass, snap a photo. And
someone's proud of his work.
I mean, I guess
I hit
coming,
that fly.
Coming from the stall, then, you know, nice job. Bono was born. I don't know. I'm really interested. I haven't been this interested to try a new technology product this much in a long time. So hopefully ours they'll start shipping the second wave soon, because that's where we get in.
Have we paid?
They haven't asked for us to pay yet.
If you pay, you have much more of a right then to start.
Well, I was one of the first like 400 people that was in the, hey, we're accepting you, the tweets, the wall of tweets. So
it's so weird that this is not a consumer product, and yet, you know, they'll have several thousand.
More than that, even. I mean, they probably sold several thousand to the IO developers, I would think. And I mean, it's been on the Today Show. It's been on, it's getting a lot of mass market coverage.
This is how they get around poor sales, poor initial sales.
Well, I think
charge a lot and don't expect to make and not have it in your budget as a money making item.
Yeah.
And then you get all your early adopters excited and you design it so it looks like a final product.
It's like the iPhone in a lot of ways. I mean,
except the iPhone was wide release.
$600 though. It wasn't wide release because it was the first unsubsidized phone most people were familiar with. And it was crazy expensive.
Crazy expensive, but anyone could buy one.
You could, well,
not gated.
Not at first, but
yeah, if you want,
I mean, you could go.
Yes,
theoretically, you could buy one. They were not available,
which is good for Apple,
right?
If Google Glass was widely available, as in everyone could buy one if they wanted to, there would be many on shelves.
But the difference is, Apple didn't need an ecosystem to launch the iPhone, or they didn't think they did because they were doing web. You know, the selling point of that first phone, which nobody remembers now, was that it had a real web browser, right? I mean, you had visual voicemail, you had a real web browser.
So it was one of the three big parts of the phone,
and that was pretty much it. There were no apps, so they didn't need to build a developer ecosystem. And Google needs a developer ecosystem for these
full
glasses
screen iPod,
to be usable. Yeah, full screen
internet communications device,
8 gigabytes
and 4 gigabytes.
Was it four, really?
4 gigabytes.
Jesus. Mine was
internet communication device and a phone.
Internet communication device that could only do email, not IM. Remember when IM
Safari
was important?
Was the logo.
How long did it take them to drop the price? It was like 6 months. It was
the 3G.
What they did was when it was 6 months when from the first iPhone is when they introduced the subsidized price. That's finally when they got the contracts with AT&T/Singular done.
Did they do a subsidized price on the first one? I thought that was only with the 3G.
They did a subsidized price on the first one 6 months later, but and that's when they also introduced the higher capacity model. But at that at that time, they gave everyone the money back, the coupon.
$100, yeah.
And then anyone who next year got the 3G could also get the qualified for subsidized pricing.
So anyway, it's the glasses are super interesting. They didn't really talk about them much. Let's just jump right into it. They didn't really talk about them much in the keynote, which was kind of surprising. They actually, this was a very non-traditional keynote for Google or any tech company that does this kind of thing. They didn't talk about a new rev of Android. So sticking with 4.2 is what's current, I guess.
4.2, even though reports say that 4.3 could be coming. Even though it would be announced after I.O.
Where are we with the food code names? Is 4.3 Key Lime Pie? Or the next one is Key Lime Pie?
I think every time they do a release, it would have to be...
Well, there were two jelly beans, though.
But those are both 4.1 and 4.2.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't think that would be Key Lime Pie, then.
I think they may be moving away from these sweet things.
Nope, absolutely not.
I mean, at least from a forward-facing...
Right type of Google Precious.
What's the wrong type of Google Precious, Norm?
Why is everyone against us?
Oh,
why?
Oh, well, we'll get to that.
Why is...
Okay.
I'm sorry, I had to do it in a more scruffy,
dude,
paralyzed voice.
Weak sauce, man.
Well, that's
weak.
That's what happened.
Low blow.
He's a billionaire.
It doesn't mean he's not a human
I would trade
being.
My voice for $1 billion. But that's probably like half of what he has. I would trade my voice right now for $1 billion.
You would trade your voice for $50 million, let's be honest.
So there you
this
go.
This is like the Little Mermaid.
There you go.
We need to get Ursula in here and start singing.
I'm thinking even like a flat million.
No.
Ariel, the Little Mermaid, was not a good haggler. If she haggled, she could have got much more than for her voice.
What did she get? She just got legs, right?
She just got legs.
I mean, and the ability to live on land.
Well, and if you think about it, though, if you lose your voice and get $1 million...
Not millions too low.
Well, you have $1 million and you have a sob story... To tell everybody.
Dude, you can't tell the sob story because you don't have a voice.
You can communicate.
Are you going to write it down on a pad of paper?
Sure.
Write $1 billion, I would hire someone to be my voice surrogate.
You mean like Stephen Hawking? Like you type something and then he says it? You get James Earl Jones to be your voice if you're hiring somebody. Just James Earl Jones falls around, he has a pair of Google glasses on, and your words come up, and then he says them in your voice.
I don't think James Earl Jones can keep up with the packed schedule, though. He's getting kind of up there in years.
It's worth it.
I would have a Monday voice, a Tuesday voice, you know, a voice for every day of the week.
There you
go. Interesting. So, the keynote started kind of slow. They talked about a bunch of API stuff. They didn't really touch there's no major OS update coming, or at least they didn't talk about that stuff. What else? Like I kind of drowsed off for a while there in the middle. They talked about new web and new image and video formats for the web.
They've had those,
which aren't new.
Stuff that exists. Yeah. They just already want them to be more popular, I guess.
Oh, WebP, you know, Facebook uses it for mobile, and if you compare a site, like come on a 7 or I guess it was 720p YouTube stream. I guess they might have streamed 1080 yesterday. On a 1080p YouTube stream, you cannot tell a difference between a JPEG and a WebP image broadcast on a big projector.
They shared
like two layers of extra compression.
The point wasn't that it looks better. The point was that it's smaller for the same image quality. The
same image quality is what I'm saying does not exist. I'm saying that if you put a JPEG and a WebP image side by side, you can tell one JPEG. And also people are confused because they love downloading images.
Is WebP is still lossy though, right?
You can do lossy or lossless.
Oh, really? It has both built in.
And you can do animated.
Right. So you can do animated GIFs, which is nice.
Animated WebPs.
What's the extension for WebP?
I believe it is
WebP.
WebP. Terrible name.
It's only four letters.
What's the picture. P stand for?
Picture? Yeah, web picture, and then they have WebV.
Which is web video.
Video.
Web video.
Yeah, so web video, VP9, I hadn't heard about VP9 yet. It's relatively new. I don't know if it was a first announcement, but it's better than H.264. It seems like it doesn't require custom hardware to encode like H.265. And they're saying same quality at 60% of the bitrate of H.264.
The big thing about VP9, and they've had this as a anti-264 thing for a while, is that it's royalty-free.
Right. And I assume WebP is the same way.
Even though JPEG is no royalties with JPEG either.
So there's usually a couple hardware surprises at I/O. It's why one of the reasons tickets sell out incredibly fast is that people go and expect to get a whole shitload of free hardware. So they when they trotted out...
Well, let's talk about last year to get some context. Every year leading up to this year, they had given up more and more. Last year, if you think of rating I/O keynotes, last year had not only the announcement of Glass, but also the skydiving.
Yeah.
Twice with Google Glass, the Focus satellite.
Why was it twice?
Because he did it the first day, and the second day they did it again to show how they did it.
Oh, really?
Sergey went on stage and goes, this is so awesome, we got to do it again.
Yeah.
And then they had the Nexus 7 announced last year, which was a big deal. They gave away a Samsung Chromebook. They gave away Nexus 4 was announced then, but Galaxy Nexus.
Yep.
And with the new Android,
there was OS. The GSM one.
And they also gave away the Nexus Q, which was while it turned out not to be a laughingstock and not a big deal at the time, it was an interesting story and something that would, from an editorial perspective, be interesting to have. This year.
The total cost on all of that stuff was $1,176 last year.
Last year?
The retail price.
And the total cost of everything they gave out this year, which to date is one thing, also around that much. $1,200.
Interesting. So the thing that they gave out so far is the Google Pixel, which is the Chromebook. I think it's a Chromebook that exists specifically to... so that the people on the Chromebook team, Chrome OS team, have a laptop that isn't a shitty netbook to carry around.
Well, it is a shitty netbook.
I mean, but at least it's a nice looking shitty
it's
netbook.
It's a $1,300 laptop with a great looking screen that
touchscreen
only runs
touchscreen high resolution
Chrome OS
touchscreen that is also a $1,300 web browser. On stage, though, when they're promoting Chromebook, this is the first time I've heard them say the Chromebook makes a great second PC. Never said it's going to be your primary PC. All they said was the Chromebook we've shown, number one selling thing in that category on Amazon for 18 months or whatever.
How many what other shit is in that category?
Netbooks.
Those aren't selling.
Is a great secondary PC.
Well, so I've long felt like if your kid wants a PC and you don't want to have to deal with giving him a real computer to maintain it and stuff like that, it's great. They're moving a lot of those into education. They talked about that fairly extensively yesterday. I mean, if you want a managed computer that doesn't require a lot of management, great, do it. Perfect. It's sold.
But $1,300 is kind of steep for that.
That's
purpose.
Insane.
Yeah.
It remains insane.
You want to give your kid like a $700 computer.
You want to give your kid a $250 computer. Because right. they're going to put peanut butter and stuff on. It's not going to last.
Oh, how old a kid are we talking about?
I figure you like 6-7 months. You know, jam it in there.
Okay, you know what? In under laptops, Ultrabooks, and tablets on Amazon.
Yeah.
The number one thing
yeah.
is still the Samsung Chromebook at $250.
Yeah, $250 is a great deal for a thing with a keyboard that a kid can write papers and stuff like that on. Like when I was in high school, when I wanted to get my first typewriter and stop turning in handwritten reports,
$250
cost $200.
Yeah. It is a typewriter,
yeah.
web connected typewriter
yeah.
that you can watch YouTube on.
Right. That makes perfect sense. It's super smart. It's a decent enough screen. It has good battery life. You can use it to take notes. Whatever. Fantastic. Sold. $1,300 is insane. A lot of them have already gone up on eBay. Valleywag has posted a story talking about the journalists who kept theirs versus the ones who sent them back or didn't take them or whatever, because it's optional to pick up this stuff. People didn't seem super excited. They did seem excited, however, when they whipped out a Galaxy S4 that is unlocked bootloader, unlocked OS, stock Android. So just to be clear, the newest, tied for hottest Android phone on the market right now.
Which is not even out on every character quite yet.
Carrier? No, it's only on AT&T.
Yeah, it's GSM. I think this is still a GSM
this
version.
This is a T-Mobile GSM version. Yeah. But does LTE T-Mobile.
Seemed really excited.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then
they thought they were going to get it for free.
Then they announced the price, which is $650 off contract.
Fair price.
The only way it's going to be available. Yeah.
Fair price for a high-end Samsung phone.
Yeah, I think it's
for any high-end
fair. I think it's exactly like if you look at the comparable iPhone or HTC One or whatever, the off-contract price is all $600-$700.
I thought that was a really smart way to get around not announcing the Nexus 5 or you know whatever their next.
Well, they announced Nexi in the winter.
Okay, but I mean, haven't they previously done big phones?
I think they did Galaxy Nexus 1 year at I/O.
I guess you're
too.
Right that it is usually winter. But this was definitely a good stopgap for that. I mean, didn't some people think they were going to do a new Nexus 7 tablet or something? And like, obviously, this isn't the same product category, but it's still in place of a new vanilla Android device. Here's a really, really good Android device that you can now get vanilla.
Exactly. I wish, and this might be coming soon. HTC had an unlocked one. Running stock, but HTC One is so tied to that all that fancy stuff they built in for that camera and their version, the new HTC Sense.
Like you don't think they have stock camera drivers for that phone that don't use?
I don't think they want to dilute the HTC brand. But well, I think one of the HTC evangelists said they might be doing an unlocked version, but I doubt it'll be stock Android.
Yeah, I would best case for Android for me. And just to be clear, the custom versions aren't bad like they were 2 years ago anymore.
They're definitely a lot better.
But the thing that does hold you back is you're usually slow getting updates when you have a custom version. So the updates for this Galaxy S4 will be provided, it seems like, on the same timeline as Nexus devices traditionally have. It seems like this is another Galaxy Nexus in all but name. Because they implied that it's going to get fast OS updates. It's going to get...
Yeah, they even called it the Nexus user experience.
Yes.
Also, a lot of them, when you buy on contract and stuff, it's still kind of dicey as to whether you're going to be able to unlock the bootloader.
Yes.
Like, some of them, it comes unlocked. Some of them, it's not that big of a pain in the ass. Some of them, it's, like, you know, impossible.
So. Well, and even if it's a big pain in the ass, then you still... Like, should your phone break, you still have to restore it. If it is usable enough for them to use it when you send it in, then you have to restore it to a core ROM, or else they may void your warranty.
Right. So that's kind of that sucks.
That's a big fucking deal if you break your phone. So we talked about the new image and video formats. Do you want to get this? Okay, so after about an hour, it was a three-hour-plus press conference. After about an hour, they started talking about some consumer-facing stuff that I thought was really interesting. The Google Hangouts app, which is part of Google Plus, but it is the unified messaging face of Google. So it eventually will roll in Google Plus, Comms, Google Chat, which is the thing that's built into Gmail right now and uses Jabber.
G-Chat.
Hangouts, SMS in the future. That's not in the initial release. And potentially Google Voice as well, because it seems like that department is rolling up and reporting into the Hangouts team as well.
As someone who's been using an integrated chat client, Trillion, for like 10 years,
yes,
I like this kind of thing. I mean, there's no reason to switch over to it from what I use now, really, because I don't hang with my buds on Google Plus.
You don't do Hangouts?
I don't do Hangouts. Nope.
Wow. You should. Okay.
But the idea of them tying all those things together is really smart.
It's the way it should work.
Especially if they can get SMS in there and they're kind of going to do what Apple has done on their platform, where they've basically replaced SMS almost as just a seamless messaging client. And it seems like Google's probably going to try to do that on Android too, just put text messages and GChat and everything just all into one service.
Yeah, I mean, the way iMessage works has been really great. It's the only thing that's frustrating about it is that when you get I'm so used to my text messages, my iMessages rather, popping up on whatever device happens to be on, whether it's an iPad or a laptop or a phone or whatever. When I get an actual text message from someone and it's on the phone, as often as not when I'm at the house and I have the tablet with me rather than the phone, and I may or may not miss it.
So you assume it's going to would pop up on the tablet and then it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't expect it to. If I'm getting, if for example, Joey, who's an Android user, sends me a text message, it's only going to pop up the phone. I totally understand why that is. I wish that it worked a little bit differently. And with Google Voice, Google has the opportunity to do that, actually, because the way Google Voice works, you can use that as your catch-all text message inbox, and then it'll relay it to everything. The other interesting thing about Google is, where Apple is, of course, trying to lock everyone into their closed platform, Google is releasing Hangouts for everything. I mean, clearly you won't have SMS support on iOS for your phone number that's attached to the phone, but you may have, I mean, when they integrate voice in the app, then you'll have that. And the app's actually quite good. There's a couple of kind of sticking points, but it for a first outing, it's much better than I expected. And it's the only thing I wish it had was more universal IM support. So something like Trillion, where you could log into AIM and log into whatever other messaging clients you use, and have the same kind of cloud syncing of all the settings and chat logs and stuff like that.
It kind of seems to me, and this probably isn't the case, but it seems like after Apple fucked up Maps so horribly last year,
yeah,
and it literally everyone who had an iPhone was saying, Google, save us, you know, give us Google Maps, and then they delivered it, and it was obviously such a like instant, you know, everyone on iOS switch over to Google Maps immediately. It seems like they've kind of realized their services are so vital now and stand on their own so well that they can put them on iOS and not save them for Android. And of course, the Android market share is so strong at this point that they don't really have much to lose by just putting all of their stuff on as many platforms as they can get it on.
It's a difference in business model, right? Remember, with Apple, they're trying to sell hardware and apps and users and stuff like that.
Service, get you the user service.
Right. They use their service as a way to lock you into their platform. With Google, you are their platform. So they're trying to get as many people onto their platform as they can.
And you can launch even from Gmail now directly into Chrome.
Yeah.
On email, yeah.
Same thing with Google Now. For example, this morning when I was going to a meeting, my Google Now popped up. I hit the thing, it launched Google Maps, and I was just navigating straight to my meeting from Google Now. They're bypassing some of the problems with iOS with that. I think that the Hangouts thing is going to be really interesting, but it's much less interesting until they integrate SMS. Because while my mom knew to download the Google Maps app when that came out last year on iOS, she never would have started using iMessage if it wasn't already in the SMS app that she was already using. And I feel like a lot of Android users are probably more likely to not do that until they actually set it up. I mean, the nice thing that Google has going for it is they do already have everybody that's using Android essentially logging into a Google account. So, like, you don't have to go through the, hey, what's your Facebook? What's your FaceTime ID? What's your iMessage ID? All that. It's just all there.
That's like 5 seconds of typing that no one wants to do.
Well, it's not that it's 5 seconds of typing that no one wants to do. It's that if they didn't, if you skipped it during the initial install, you probably are never going to find your way back to doing it. So with Apple, they had to prompt everyone after the upgrade to iOS, what, 5, probably? When did they do
with messages?
iMessage? 5 or 6?
6.
Okay, so at the start of iOS 6, they said, hey, what's your Apple ID for FaceTime? What's your Apple ID for iMessage? Google, they don't have to do that. They just say, hey, we already know who you are.
You're
connected. Yeah. Hey, you're at home now.
It's like a Microsoft passport.
Kind of, except for people actually use it. The one thing that is a huge bummer about it, is that there's no ability to universally turn off logging. So if you don't want to log your IAMs and stuff like that, you have to turn that off on a per conversation basis, not even a per person or per like account setting.
That's a little weird.
It is weird, especially given the kind of data retention problems that people are having these days. The other thing is I wish that there was a desktop client that wasn't web-based, because I prefer a real IAM app that stands on its own and lives when I close the browser.
So when a browser crashes.
Well, it's not even that the browser crashes, it's just that I fuck up and close the wrong tab, or I open, switch that tab to something else without thinking that, it's going to take me offline.
Control-Shift-T,
exactly, or Command, as the case may be. They showed more Google Now and voice search stuff that applies to, I guess, iOS, Chrome, Android, pretty much across the board.
It's only Android right now.
The new cards. The new cards are only Android, yeah. Yes.
But the service is on multiple platforms.
Right, so Google Now on desktop?
I thought that I heard Google Now on desktop in there, but I couldn't find any confirmation anywhere. So I feel like they've said that Google Now is coming to Chrome at some point in the future. Desktop Chrome, I couldn't find it when I was looking to confirm stories this morning. So, but the new Google Now cards, they showed a lot of, most of it seems to be tied into the knowledge graph stuff, which is basically, when you type in, say, a famous person's name into Google and it says, mm-hmm. This is Adam Savage. He was born on this day. This is what he's famous for. Here's where he is.
You might also want to click Jamie Heineman.
Yeah, exactly. That stuff where it takes the context of information out of the pages and just puts it straight into Google is what they call knowledge graph. And it seems like they've dramatically expanded the types of things that are in knowledge graph. The demo that they gave of this was a woman who was going to like Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk, which is a old school Coney Island style boardwalk where there's like roller coasters and, funnel cakes and that kind of stuff. And she actually asked it, how tall do you have to be to ride the roller coaster there? And it said, you have to be 4 feet, whatever inches. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's something I would never have thought to search for on my phone as a knowledge graph item. But it's there. I guess it's useful.
You just reminded me that I really want some funnel cake at Maker Faire this weekend.
Oh, my God, no.
Yeah.
Oh, the
it's churro, man. Churros
fat,
are bust.
Fat on a plate.
No, it's dough, fatty dough on a plate. It's just like a skinny donut. That's all a funnel cake is.
You don't like
with cake. Powdered sugar poured all over it.
You can put powdered sugar on your donuts.
That's true.
I had a cupcake yesterday that was a donut flavored cupcake with Nutella on top.
I've had Nutella icing muffins before.
Yeah,
they're also pretty good.
Pretty good stuff. So yeah, the knowledge graph stuff. The big thing on the Google Now / voice search front was the ability to do reminders the same way you can with Siri, which I think is probably the first or second most useful feature for me in Siri, is to be able to say, hey, remind me to do this at such and such a time or such and such a place.
Gated with time or location.
That's what I just said. Yeah.
So until now, Google's voice stuff has been basically search.
Does that add it into your Google Calendar?
I would assume so, yes.
Okay.
It's probably, I think that they have a tasks sublist that is either attached to Calendar or Gmail. I'm not sure which, but I think it probably puts it there. It doesn't work on iPhone, so I haven't been able to test it yet.
I think aren't Gmail and Google Calendar pretty integrated now in the way it will take.
Yes. It may be the tasks lives in both and it doesn't matter. But you can do a task list. I mean, let's see if it does work. Actually, I'm kind of curious. I thought it didn't, but I didn't actually test it.
Yeah, from what I've used, at least right now, the iOS version of Google Now is still just voice search.
Remind me to call Norm tomorrow morning. Nope. Doesn't work. It takes me to Norm Peterson's IMDb page. So that's Google Now. Voice search is coming to Chrome too, which I think is less interesting than mobile, but maybe... Like, I could see using that if you're real lazy and don't want to... Like, if I'm on the laptop, I'll usually just type because it's faster. But, whatever. It's good.
Don't you want to be in a Starbucks? Hello? Okay, Google.
Okay, Google.
Okay, Google.
Okay, Glass. Lemon Party. I think that's it. They had a couple of other new cards that seemed less interesting. I don't remember what any of them were. I got a birthday card from Google Now yesterday. I didn't know that they did that. But it pops up and says, hey, Facebook and Google Plus and everyone else.
Yeah.
Like the internet wishes you happy birthday now. It's really creepy.
Happy belated birthday, by the way.
Hey, thanks, Wes.
How old are you, Will?
38.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I have...
What's that wow mean?
that's you're not 40 yet. That's good.
No, I've got a long time till 40.
Yeah, yeah, you can live forever.
I don't know about forever, but I'll take 120, 130.
Hey, embryonic stem cells, we're getting there.
Give me a big embryonic stem cell smoothie.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's nom, nom.
Oh, my heart's revitalizing itself.
I can hardly feel myself breathing. My eyebrows are growing.
We can make hamburgers out of stem cells now. We can surely keep you alive forever.
Yeah.
Since I started using Google Contacts as just my catch-all for all the people I know and phone numbers and emails and everything, yes. I really like that all of those people who have Google profiles, which is a lot of them, I get a little pop-up when I do a Google search, go to Google, it says, hey, it's so-and-so's, it's Jared's birthday today.
Yeah.
And then I can go on Twitter or, you know, instant message or whatever and say happy birthday.
It's like Facebook, but, you know, I go there.
You don't go to Facebook?
Not very often.
Good.
Usually I just go to Twitter, and then Twitter goes to Facebook. Although I do post baby pictures on Facebook, because that's what Facebook's for. It's for posting baby pictures and finding out which of your friends are easy.
Simply breathtaking.
Wait. What was that last part?
Finding out which of your friends are easy.
That's because you use that app, right?
I did not use that app.
No.
I'm in a committed relationship.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah.
The app you're talking about is...
Bang with Friends.
But you might have browsed a little.
Nope, didn't add it. I did use the knowledge. I have Facebook graph search.
Here's a pro tip.
Yeah, pro tip. If you want to find out which of your friends are using Bang with Friends, you can search for friends of mine that use the app Bang with Friends with the Google Facebook. What is it called? Knowledge graph? No, they call it. I don't know. It's some deep search. Anyway, the upshot is you can tell which of your friends are into that.
You basically used the anonymous porn browsing mode.
All dudes.
It was nothing but dudes.
Yeah, you basically used porn mode to do that search instead of...
No, you have to be signed in.
But you didn't use that. The point is you didn't use the app.
Oh, no, I didn't install the app.
Right.
Yeah, no, I would never install the app.
You just found a clever way to know who has installed it.
Yeah, what does the app do?
The app's really gross. So what the app does is you sign up, as I understand it, you sign up for the app. I mean, Wes knows. Let's be honest.
I don't use Facebook, so.
Oh, okay, good for you. You sign up for the app, and then you have a list of all of your friends, and you basically say, here are the people on my friends list that I'm friends with that I would like to sleep with if it is available and something that is possible. It was started as a joke, but it took off apparently really hugely, and it got a lot of mainstream media coverage last week, so you've probably heard about it. You only find out if somebody else wants to sleep with you if you sign up and also say you want to sleep with them. So it's a real low. It's like throwing darts at each other from across the room. The darts have to hit in midair.
Wow.
And then what's the likelihood
that
someone's just gone down the list and just clicked everybody?
My standards are okay. I mean, that is a possibility.
It's a binding contract, right?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. I think once you click the box.
Once you click the box,
yep.
I click the box, and that's it.
Hello?
I mean, you can just see the guy who's clicked everybody, and then they see that pop-up, like, so-and-so is also you, and they're like, well, shit.
unclick. Command-Shift-D.
Did not expect this to happen.
So of course, using the Facebook graph search to bypass this causes a host of problems, because it bypasses the whole way the service works. Because then you can just tell who's using it and decide if you want to just... But as Norm said, all dudes. At least on mine. I don't know. We were talking about Google I/O stuff still. Voice search. I mean, I said this yesterday on Twitter, and I think we've talked about Google Voice Search a lot. It is a really awesome service. Like they do, it works really much better than it ever should. And one of the themes of I/O this time seemed to be, to me at least, that a lot of things that Google had been working on for 10 plus years, probably in some cases, are kind of converging into services where things like voice search really level up the other stuff that they're doing. And having good voice search, which has proven to companies like Apple and Microsoft to be difficult to do, only works because of the kind of massive scale that Google has. And the number of voices that they capture on a day-to-day basis. The next thing they showed was Maps. Maybe it was the next thing, but it's the next thing on the list. They have a redesign. If you asked for an invite yesterday, you probably got an invite right about the time that we started recording this morning.
That was their big consumer announcement.
I don't think so. I think the photo thing was their big consumer announcement.
We'll talk about photos after maps.
It's next on the list because they kind of roll into each other. I was going to segue, but
okay.
Thanks for ruining that, Norm.
Well, in the keynote, they did photos first and then maps.
I know, but I thought I was going to do it better. But whatever. So they do vector maps as always, but the new design basically takes all the frame out. So it's just full screen maps. It reminds me a lot of Wonderground, the weather site that was did this. I think was the first time I saw a full browser canvas map viewer.
Paint the word picture. What do you see now in Google Maps?
So remember in the old days when you would load up Google Maps and there'd be a white background and then a box with the map in it and a frame on the left.
Entire column. On the left side.
That was like search results or directions or whatever.
And ads.
Yeah. So now all that's gone. And the whole canvas, all of the area of the browser that you make available to the browser.
Under the Google toolbar.
Aside from the hat, the Google hat, which is what I think the technical term for those things are, there's a search block. There's a help and feedback dropdown. There's zoom in and zoom out buttons, although you can use your scroll button or like two-finger drag on a laptop. I don't know what this other thing is. I think this must be different layers. Yeah. So, and then a pop-up that gives you different layers that you can bring up. And that's it. Like it is all map. And it's very smooth zooming in and out. I don't know if I can zoom out and do the James Bond villain view. I think I have to click on Earth first to do that. But
vector maps was a big thing because this is one of the things that Apple touted as their maps being better than Google Maps instead of using images.
This is one of those situations where Apple missed the point, like got the idea right and then missed the point of maps as a whole.
It's the fundamental difference between Apple.
Google had vector maps last year, though, too. They just weren't making them available on iOS.
On mobile, yes. Yeah. The thing that Google comes from a data perspective, and they just have all the data that Apple doesn't have.
Yeah.
And it's because they have a search engine.
They're essentially the Futurama brains.
The search engine just feeds nonstop data to Google to refine everything.
Yes.
And Apple, the feedback, I don't know anyone who's failed at using Google Map or Apple Maps and then reported the problem. If it fails, you know, Apple has no way of knowing unless you report it.
Right. And with Google, if it fails, they can tell because you go search for something else two-tenths of a second later.
Yeah.
And just having getting that level of information has given them a lot more context about how things work. So this new version of Maps is almost like Google Earth. You can zoom all the way out. You can get a natural perspective. If you zoom all the way out, you get live cloud view, in Earth view.
With the satellite footage.
Which was something that I used to pay for. Like I had this awesome desktop wallpaper utility that downloaded live cloud maps and painted that on the surface of the Earth.
They also talked
about really neat
in the vector map. The way they emphasize streets is different. So as you click on different points of interest, it will highlight other points of interest that are ones similar to those.
Yes, or 1 degree off. It seems like,
and then also highlight make more apparent the roads leading up to that.
Yeah, so they uses the context of what you search for to show you the information that's going to be more important to you. For example, the example they gave was going to Randall Street Museum. Is that my laptop spinning? No, I don't think so. The Randall Street Museum, which is a little tiny alley off of a park. Normally that street would never be on the map. When you search for the museum, the street name pops up and the street names that feed into that street all pop up. So even if you don't do nav to get there, you'll still see the information that you're looking for without having to do any weird zooming or anything like that.
I'm curious how often when you guys use maps to get somewhere or to look at a region, how often do you actually use the satellite view versus just the plain old street view? Because I mean, it's like all the things that they announced kind of are cool features, and it's really it's cool that they basically integrated Google Earth into it. But I never use any of that stuff other than the occasional street view.
I think people use satellite features for topographical stuff when it is basically you go take it one extra step and you go street view if you want to see where you're going. But the improvements they've made just to the vector view are very good. For example, you click a point of interest, you search a destination, and then you can click places that Google knows are tied to you, such as your work or your home.
Yes.
And it'll give you automatically both the driving route, but also the walking comparison and the public transportation comparison.
Yeah, it's the first substantial change that they've made since they added vectors, really. So I'm interested. Like I said, we just got access to this moments before we started recording, so I haven't spent a lot of time with it yet.
My question has always been, how do they prioritize what pops up?
I think that they probably have ad relationships.
That's my first bet, and that's why I've always been skeptical of these
recommendations. Although I don't know, I'm looking at this, and the things that are popping up for me are Sundance Kabuki Cinemas, where I go to watch movies. The dog food, the place where I go buy dog food.
So, is it places you've searched?
It's places I've searched for. So, like Sightglass Coffee is here, AK Subs is here, Central Computers is here. It is stuff that I use. I'd be interested to see if you have the same stuff in the same area.
The point they made yesterday is that you probably don't have the same stuff.
Yeah, I mean I'm kind of into that. I think that's like, if it is more useful for me, I'm fine. They also have some other stuff that they've added. I don't know if you've used, if you've tried that Field Trip app that they added to iOS a few weeks ago, but it's basically like a location discovery thing. And I installed it when I was walking, when I was going to be walking around, I want to say like the Inner Richmond or something like that, with the baby. And I was like, well, maybe I'll go find something that I've never done before. And it pops up with different restaurants and stuff. Pretty sure that one is not driven by my interest, but driven by like their offers, their Groupon style deals service.
Well, so they're finally kind of doing more with the Zagat stuff that they bought.
Zagat.
Right.
Zagat.
Like Zagat.
Cat.
So yeah, I think Maps is, you should definitely check it out. I mean, if nothing else, I like the bigger view. I think that's pretty rad. What was next on the queue? Let's talk about photos, because the photo stuff ties into the maps in a kind of interesting way. They're adding, so previously Google had a couple of different ways to share photos using Google Plus and Picasa, which Picasa is at this point short for the world. If they haven't announced it yet, they will soon.
You mean as a desktop editing tool? Photo management tool?
The photo management tool that Google is going to push users into is Google Plus Photos. I mean, that was super clear after yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that they added there is really interesting. It seems like they're looking at like the problems that you normal human beings have that have arisen from carrying around a camera that takes pretty good pictures all the time, just in their pocket with their phone. And they're doing things like auto tagging photos when Google recognize, they're doing heuristic analysis on the photos to find the context, whether that context is the people in the photo and whether they're close to you or not, like your wife or kids or mother or sister or whatever, or the landmarks even that you're at. So if you're standing in front of the Golden Gate Bridge, it will tag a photo Golden Gate Bridge.
And then if you ask Google now, photos from Golden Gate Bridge, my photos from Golden Gate Bridge,
yes,
or my photos from San Francisco, it will include all those photos.
So what's happening is instead of Google search being a worldwide phenomena for all the information that's available there, they're also going to give you context-aware search for things that information that is personal to you, that you've shared with Google, I guess, which is interesting, creepy, scary, fun, good. Like the photo problem is a real thing. Like the photo management problem, if you don't spend a fairly significant period of time, if you take a lot of photos and you don't spend a fair amount of time keeping track of that stuff, pretty soon you'll have 30 or 40 gigs of photos on a hard drive that just, you have no idea what the hell they are. And I know, I mean, we've talked about how you manage your photos some, Norm, but I think normal people probably just dump them all in a folder, put them on a service, or upload them to Instagram or Flickr or whatever.
Leave them on their phone.
Yeah, or leave them on their phone. And then this combined with the instant upload thing that Google Plus already does, where it takes photos from your camera roll, blasts them up to the service, means that at some point you're going to log into Google Plus and your photos will all be organized for you.
Yeah, and they're giving people more storage for those photos, 15 gigs for free now.
Yeah.
In full resolution.
They're adding auto retouch functionality, which isn't anything new, except for that I think they're doing it preemptively instead of waiting for you to click on a button, so that they'll fix contrast issues, light exposure problems, red eye, stuff like that. And then the other thing that I thought was neat is that they've added it's a terrible name, but they've added an awesome button that lets you
is it like Instagramming it?
I don't think it's that awesome. It's not like a filter. Well, I mean, so one of the things that they showed was a sequence of images shot that were converted into an animated GIF style picture, which I assume was a WebP animated, not an animated GIF. What do you think about photo stuff, Norm?
I think that if you're taking photos with a camera phone, like and whether it's an Android phone or an iPhone, and it's going, all those photos are going somewhere, and Google's doing stuff to them, that's fine, because I don't care about those photos.
You don't care about the photos once they get on Google's server?
No, I don't care about the photos I take on my phone.
Oh, gotcha.
But for my real photos, that's going to stay local and stay in my own dark room. I don't need the data center.
You don't need... So you're not in... Well, you're a little different situation, though, too.
I think most people who take photos with a DSLR or raw photos and like processing them will want to keep that under their own control.
How many dark rooms do you think there are in the country compared to how many dark rooms there were in 1995?
1%.
Or even less?
I think 1%.
I don't think there were that many dark rooms back in 95.
There were shitloads, because they were automatic photo machines.
Wouldn't the peak of dark rooms have been mid to late 90s, right?
What do you mean dark room? Like, in what sense? Like, is it a physical room where someone goes in and they
an ability to turn film into photos?
Yeah, if you're talking about just a machine where you put film, a roll of film in, and then out pops printed film.
Maybe it would have been more in like the 80s before that there was more automation.
Yeah, because in the 90s, in the late 80s and early 90s, you could buy a machine for a couple hundred grand that you'd dump a roll of film in and five minutes later.
Walgreens.
Yeah. So maybe early 80s would be the peak of the dark room.
The actual physical, like, small room where,
right,
with the red light.
I would say, like, 85, probably, if I had to guess. Because when I was a kid, like, the one-hour photo places just started to come up when I was probably 10 or 12 years old. By the time I was in high school, though, they weren't just everywhere. They were affordable.
Back then, the one-hour photo places were like, this is going to be the trillion-dollar industry. You know, these machines are just going to get better and better, and we're going to have jobs for life.
Well, I mean, The 1 hour photo machines, that's still what's in Target. Like, you can still take a roll of film to Target and they dump it into the same machine that prints out the prints.
And now it's more about digital kiosks where you put a USB key or an SD card.
Right. Instead of being one input, there's now 50.
Yeah.
And you can send them from the web or Flickr or whatever you want. So when I was in high school, the yearbook and the newspaper went from doing their own darkroom work to using a 1 hour photo because it was cheaper and easier. And you didn't have to expose the kids to all sorts of carcinogenic chemicals.
When my dad was college age, my dad's a photographer. Mm-hmm. And when he was college age, I guess was probably when he started doing darkroom work. And it was also when he discovered that he was mildly allergic to the chemicals you use to do photos.
Oh, like black and white stuff or color stuff?
Just like the chemicals that you put. Well, I guess I'm not sure.
Like developers or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Have either of you, well, Norm, I know you've been to the photo booth where they do tintypes, but have either of you ever done real film developing?
I haven't, no.
It's really interesting. It's like using enlargers and stuff like that is pretty fun. And I like it's one of those things that I think they'll probably be as film starts to kind of
a throwback.
Yeah, it's kind of like vinyl, right? I mean, it's the same kind of thing in that there is value in knowing how to do it the old-fashioned way without having to have you could conceivably make film yourself,
and you can actually develop it in a way where you can create artificial artifacts. Mm-hmm. Physically.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at the tintype process. I mean, that is a thing that if you have the chemicals and a piece of metal, the right piece of metal, and the right kind of camera, you basically anybody can do that. You don't need to get supplies from Kodak or Fuji or whoever to do that and develop it. You need a relatively dark room that's close to whatever you're going to shoot, and then a large format camera like a Hasselblad or something like that with the right adapter, and you can do it.
My mental reference for developing photos is Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh yeah, because of the dip.
Yep. The scene towards the end when he is developing his pictures, and that's when he makes the discovery about the will being in Acme's pocket. I can't remember. There's a big revelatory moment when he's doing his photo work and he figures it out, cracks the case.
Dark rooms will always be in movies as long as there are ghost stories to tell.
Because photos of ghosts are terrifying?
Yes. Especially when you're in a dark room.
Fatal Frame was the scariest game I've ever played. And I got like 10 minutes into it before I had to stop.
I think that was just re-released, or they announced
the Xbox version or whatever, the last generation.
I want to say they either just put it out on PSN or they announced something to do with Fatal Frame. Mm-hmm.
It was, if you like scary games, Fatal Frame will make you poop your pants. It was real scary.
I like scary games. I don't like pooping my pants.
Well, maybe you should get some diapers and give it a try.
Mm-hmm. Depends.
Yeah. Oops, I crap my pants. Those things are really funny until you have to deal with somebody that craps their pants three times a day. Anything else on the photo stuff we want to talk about? I thought the photo stuff was the most, like, some of the stuff that they were showing with photos is the kind of thing that, like, you show to somebody who doesn't understand how technology stuff works, and they're going to think it's magic. Like, looking at your picture of the Golden Gate Bridge or the Eiffel Tower and doing that on a scale of everybody, you know, who uploads pictures is a big
that's a good point.
Computing problem.
We still have, and bless old people, we still have a lot of people that we know that are still alive right now that were around before we had computers and remember.
Just to be clear, you were around before we
really
had computers.
And lived the majority of their life in the analog age. And if you ever want to feel like Steve Jobs, you could totally, you know, show them technology. It works. It
just
absolutely works.
Crib an iPhone keynote and take it to your grandma's
house? Absolutely. When I gave my parents an iPhone 3,
my God.
I first said, oh, here, I'm giving you my iPad. And I gave them the iPad 1. Like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I went, psych. No, this is the iPad I'm giving you. And it was the iPad 3. And I went, whoa, that's even more amazing. And did you see that video of the guy who gave his grandpa, who had, like, people on the internet retouch up a photo, like restore a photo of his.
Oh, like, oh, I know, like, what you're talking about.
Like a 70s, like,
was
a,
like a
19- blue green
20s.
Oh, okay.
He was like a World War II, like, dude in the Navy, and he took a photo of the photo he had, which was like torn and.
Oh, he did it on his phone?
Well, no, it wasn't on his phone. Okay. It was a high-res photo, and then people on the internet not only fixed that up, but then, like, added parts of the photo that weren't there.
Is this a Reddit story?
Possibly.
Okay.
But the guy who got all these photos done, he gave it to his grandpa, and then he presented and he shot a video. He had, like, his sister or something shoot a video of it revealing to his grandpa, and he totally did it in, like, a Steve Jobs fashion. Well, grandpa, this is the photo you gave me, right? Is that right? It's, oh yeah, that's the photo I gave you. Yeah, you see, well, this is what someone did with that. And I was, oh, it looks pretty good. And then he, like, did like seven iterations of, and then this person did it even better, and then even better. It was amateur hour, and it was amazing. But I could almost tell the guy was disappointed that his grandpa wasn't crying, like, was not as amazed as he thought the reaction would be. Like, he didn't get a girl hearing her voice.
His grandfather wasn't
the
greatest generation because he breaks down in tears at a fucking photograph, Norm.
I think that's what he wanted to get,
well,
to impress the internet.
This is what's wrong with Americans today.
What a dick. Yeah. Doing something nice for his grandpa, doesn't get tears, secretly let down.
I don't know if he was actually secretly let down, but
which image macro was that, Wes?
Which image?
Which, was that, like,
secretly let down?
Secretly let down, okay. I think that you should go to retirement homes and explain technology. I think you should be the Pied Piper of retirement communities.
You gotta have,
and,
like,
iPads.
A proper sense of showmanship.
Yeah.
Like, old people have short attention spans also.
I don't think
maybe they do have long.
Right, they
the
have
people
perspective.
On the internet have short attention spans.
You have a short attention
so
span.
So if you're gonna impress people on the internet with a video of you impressing an old person,
you gotta cut it down.
You gotta cut it down.
I guarantee you, if you showed my grandmother any Photoshopped YouTube video that has aliens in it, she would be all in.
Like alien autopsy stuff, or
like what's the name of the chupacabra, or the, like, the UFO, the videos where somebody does the UFO, like, flyover that looks quote unquote real.
Yeah,
like, she would buy it hook, line, and sinker.
Let's be honest here, we're all looking for the next Oculus grandma.
I wasn't, but, you know, okay. You may be hunting for the next Oculus grandma.
Yeah, well, who doesn't want 10 million views on YouTube?
Well, sigh. He's already got a billion. He's got no need for 10 million.
I would rather see Peaches the cat and Lucky the dog get a million views on YouTube.
If Peaches the cat and Lucky the dog get a million views, I'll be very happy. Because I like both Peaches the cat and Lucky the dog.
But Chloe Bananas will not be happy.
Chloe Bananas has 2.7 million views. She's cool.
Oh, okay.
She's got no competition yet.
One-tenth the way there.
Yep, exactly.
There's a lot of Google I.O. that was kind of... Okay.
Well, so, it is... The thing I was thinking the whole time is, like, if you look at each of these things on the surface, it is kind of, okay, there's no moonshot, right? There's no huge... There's no Siri or voice search or, you know, any of the other stuff that we've seen over the years. But as a whole, the stuff that they're doing from a computing standpoint is really, really impressive. Like doing image recognition on stuff that's not the right, not always the same perspective is a massive, massive computing problem. Getting voice search to the point that you don't think about it, like Google voice search works on everything but really unusual proper nouns, in my experience.
But and you also speak problem. To Google voice search with a special semantics.
I actually kind of don't. Syntax. I talk to the computer like it's a syntax. Like it's a personal assistant.
Nah, you
and I'm an asshole.
Then your failure rate's gonna be much higher than someone who knows the syntax.
See, you think that, but no. I just say Google navigate to blah blah blah. Like that's as much syntax. I want to go to my next.
That's still a syntax. You're not. It's not conversational. It's like, hey Google, how you doing? I was wondering if what good pizza places were, you know, around this place. Could you give me directions for this time? Like that's a conversation.
That just makes you wishy washy.
Yeah, you just sound like a kind of a bitch.
Now it's what you're still doing is, you know, Google search restaurants, Soma, San Francisco, Japanese.
Absolutely not. Google, I need restaurants. I need fast food restaurants near me. Google, I need restaurants with a drive-through near me.
Does that work?
Fuck, yes, that works.
You need restaurants with a drive-through near you?
Yes, you can get restaurants with a drive-through.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, because you know what?
When you Google, I'm hungry. I would like some restaurants with a drive-through near me.
Hold it up to the microphone.
Nope. Nope.
Didn't work?
Nope. Nope. It got confused that I'm hungry.
Well, then you shouldn't have said I have my, does the computer care that I don't care that you're hungry. Why would your phone care that you're hungry?
The computer doesn't care. That's the fundamental problem.
Then the last thing that they announced was the Music All Access, Google Music. Google, what's the official name of this? Is it Google Play Music All Access?
That is correct.
It's a fucking terrible name. It's Google's music service. They've had the Digital Locker for a couple of years now, I guess. It started in beta. The locker service is the thing that lets you upload your existing collection to the internets and then stream it from the cloud to your phone, tablet, PC, living room, Google Q, whatever outputs you want. The interesting thing about this is it's the first time, I think, that we've seen a streaming service that also has locker capability that's cloud-based. With Spotify, you can store some of your local collection in the same like on phone cache file, but it doesn't sync across devices, right? You have to do it on
it
each device.
Sync across device.
Yeah, I mean that's a big deal because right now I'm happy to subscribe to RDO. I love the service. I give them $10 a month or whatever it is. Don't care. But if I want to listen to the Beatles or Led Zeppelin or video game soundtracks or stuff that isn't available on RDO or Spotify or whatever the service is, I have to close that and go into music on my phone or whatever. And it's a pain in the ass and it's not unified.
But Google's only got a couple million songs, right?
It doesn't matter.
2 million songs.
You can download the because anything you don't that they don't stream, you just buy.
So why would you pay $10 a month for?
Well,
to
I didn't.
Songs?
I wouldn't because it's only
on so Android. It does matter.
It's only on Android also. So I mean, you have to assume that their catalog is going to grow.
But there's a pretty big gulf between 2 million and Spotify's, what, 13?
13.
RDO's.
It depends on what you listen
eight,
to.
9. I guess that's true.
If you listen to top 40, you probably don't give a shit.
Yeah.
If you listen
but,
to.
But if you do, you're maybe kind of dumb to buy the to pay for a streaming service anyway because they are so much about the catalog.
Well, that is a valid point. I mean, the way I look at it when I decided I was going to switch to a, because I pretty regularly bought one or two, maybe three CDs a month for pretty much my adult life. And when I decided to switch to the streaming thing, I looked at it and I was like, okay, this means that I have to get two CDs worth out of this every month or else it's not worth my money, basically. And
you have to stop thinking of that way.
Why?
Because what you're paying for is instant access.
Well,
if you're going to, like,
I'm paying to graze, basically. And I also, by saying I'm going to go to the subscription service, I'm saying, hey, I'm not going to ever stop listening to new music. I'm always going to listen to new music. Because if you listen to the same music over and over again,
because
then you should just buy the files,
right?
And call it
and,
a day.
And like you're banking on never disconnecting from that service, because then you lose access to everything you've bought.
Well, I haven't bought anything.
And everything that you've wanted, you know, listened to without buying.
I'm actually not worried about that. That's easy enough to bring back. Because if you want something, you just search for it and it comes up. It's all there. I think that's good, though. When, like, for example, when Imagine fell off of RDO, I was bummed out and I had to go buy the fucking MP3s because I had that on tape or something, I guess. I'm interested to see if Apple launches a subscription service as well. I have to imagine the music labels aren't going to be real keen on Apple doing subscription services, because the money that
it's been kind of rumored forever and hasn't happened yet.
They bought, what was the name of the service? I don't even remember now. They bought a music streaming service years ago. I don't think that the point is the revenue that music labels make on streaming services is so dramatically lower than what they make on single and album sales that they're not going to want the biggest music store in the world to suddenly offer an all you can eat for a fraction of the price of one album. So. Anyway,
so how about some non-Google I/O news?
Hold on, one other thing. No iOS app. Also, it's a web app only for iOS, and there's some third-party ones, but they suck and they don't support the streaming stuff. So, if you're an iOS user, probably don't give a shit about Google Music.
I do actually have an iOS Google Music app that obviously doesn't do the streaming stuff, but just has, because I upload. Yeah, I just upload all my stuff, and the one I use is fine.
But it only does the locker stuff.
Right. Yeah. But you said the apps suck and yeah, this one's not perfect and it's not as good as it would be on Android, but I used two of them and the first one I downloaded totally blew.
Which one is it that you like? The one I used was just called Google Music, I think.
That one, G Music. That one sucked.
Yeah, it was bad.
Melodies is the one I use.
Okay, and is it free?
No, it's like $2, I think.
Okay. Your favorite things of 2012.
Yeah, but it's solid. Okay. So it's worth using if you have all your stuff on Google Music.
Does search work and all that stuff?
I'm pretty sure search works.
Okay, cool. You heard it from here, Wesley Fenlon.
Yeah.
Melodies.
Thumbs up.
Precious melodies. No, that's memories. I think that's it for Google Plus news, for Google Googlio news. Do we forget anything? I mean, I feel like we've been talking about Googlio news for about 100 years now.
Yep.
I thought people were kind of down on it. I thought it was a pretty good keynote. I thought there was a lot of, like, it was the kind of thing we didn't talk about Larry Page talking at all. You should just go watch the keynote and fast forward to when Larry Page came out at the very end of the keynote. It was an unusual conversation.
It wasn't an exciting keynote, but I think you were right that there a lot of their different services are finally kind of wrapping around each other and making each other better, like voice, making other things a lot more usable and more exciting. And it's pretty cool to see them really starting to use all of the data they have to just bind everything they do together.
Well, and I mean, the thing is, there are fewer opportunities to make something that's going to make you go, oh, wow, I can't believe that. This is going to completely change the way I use my phone. And like,
I don't think you need to completely change. I mean,
I know. That's my point, is that stuff is the we're way past the point of diminishing returns on that kind of stuff now. And the things that they rolled out last year as the new killer features were sadder than the list of shit that Samsung rolled out at their press conference, where it's like, you can take people's heads out of pictures. You can take the good picture from one head and put from one photo and put it on the, take the good head from one photo and put it the bad head on another photo. And it's just all stupid shit that nobody's ever going to use.
They should have called that Guillotine.
That's a great, great, great name for a feature.
I'm sure a marketing person would be all over that.
D/recapitation. I'd much rather see stuff like this, the smaller stuff that actually is meaningful, than things like, hey, face unlock for my phone, or eye tracking, which I don't even think they ever shipped that, or if they did, no one ever used it. So yeah, good on Google for doing a boring yet useful press conference. A+. Let's roll on and talk about Kepler. We've talked about Kepler before here.
Yes, we have.
Kepler is the it's a really neat idea. They use this massive array of CCD sensors, very sensitive light sensors. They aim the telescope at a very small patch of sky for a really long time, 2+3 years,
something like that.
It's a satellite space telescope, and it looks at the same patch of sky exclusively, with the goal of measuring the slight, ever so slight changes in intensity that happen when a planet transits across the surface of that, the front of that sun, between us and them, you know, 20 light years away.
So when they're looking at stars, which are suns, if that star gets ever so slightly dimmer,
infinitesimally,
that is because a planet, which is, you know,
or
some object,
could be a space whale,
its size is crossing it, its path, maybe not even across its center, that's still detectable.
So it's one of the two ways that we have to detect exoplanets right now. The other one has to do with gravitational wobble of the sun. And yeah, it's the spaceship's it's broken. It's been up for a long time. They've extended the mission once.
Is that it for Kepler?
Don't know yet. So Kepler, like most long duration satellites, like Hubble Space Telescope and ISS and other things that stay in orbit and need to maintain an orientation, uses gyroscopes to, well, fancy gyroscopes called reaction wheels to maintain its orientation in space. And the way it does that is by spinning three of these reaction wheels at different speeds. And when it needs to adjust up, down, left, or right, they just ever so slightly change the direction of one of those, the speed at which one of those wheels is spinning, and the spacecraft pivots around the wheel, basically. So one failed, I think, last year. It can work with three of the reaction wheels spinning indefinitely, but the third one, the second failure happened, it seems like earlier this week. At least that... Actually, let me be 100% clear. They don't know that that was what failed. The spacecraft went into safe mode, which is exactly what it sounds like. It goes into like a low power standby and says, "Hey, something's broken. Fix
me." Fix
me.
Yep.
And so they're working on it. They think that the one of the reaction wheels is broken, the third one, and they're going to try to spin it back up using a couple of different techniques. And if they can get it spinning again, then it'll continue. If not, it has already been a wildly successful mission. I think they've detected something like 132 new planets.
How long has it been up there?
Since 2010, I think.
That's not really that long when you, if you think about it. I mean, how long has Hubble been up?
Well, it's different. Each of these programs is designed with a different duration, depending on what they want to do. And sometimes they keep stuff up longer than sometimes you continue collecting good science from these probes and you keep them running for much longer than the intended span.
You always want to get more bang for what you paid for.
Yeah. I mean, once you get it into orbit, or in this case, way far out of orbit, then the most of the money is spent and you just have to pay for some dudes to run it and radio time. Right.
What happened to Skylab? How did that fall?
So Skylab...
Which was built 40 years ago this week.
Really? It was 40 years ago they launched it or built it? Launched? Seems like launched, probably.
Probably launched.
Skylab was our first space station. As I recall, it suffered... It was low, and it was getting more atmospheric drag than we expected, because I think that the ionosphere heated up and expanded into the area that Skylab was, so it was dragging more than they thought it was going to. One of the early missions for the shuttle was one of the early missions that was designed for the shuttle, and of course never happened because it deorbited earlier than expected, was to go up on like the second or third space shuttle mission, grab Skylab, put it in the cargo bay, and bring it back. So there was originally a bring Skylab back mission for the very, very early space shuttle. But I think Skylab deorbited in what, like 1976 or 78 or something?
9 months.
It was only up for 9 months?
It was only manned for 9 months.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, the first mission was like 20 days. The second one was 40 days, and the third was 80 days. But it was the first time they had a refrigerator in space. Only time we've had a refrigerator in space.
Well, freezer in space.
Refrigeration. Yeah. It looks like Kepler, I'm not finding the date, but I think it was launched in 2009 and started collecting science in 2010, I believe.
So we at least got a couple, two or three good years out of it.
Yeah, the original planned lifetime was 3.5 years. They refunded it in 2012 through 2016. But yeah, the second of the reaction wheels has failed now.
That's something I think a lot of people don't understand, is that these projects, they only work as long as they're funded, and the funding terms are definite. And so it's not like, oh, International Space Station is going to be there forever. It might seem that way, but it's only funded through... You know,
2020,
and then after that, who knows?
Yeah. Well, and after that, then the other partners, because it's subject to international treaties, and the other partners can step in or say, you know, fuck it. Let's just let her, let's see what happens. Break it apart.
It could be an all-Russian space station.
Yeah. Das Vedanya, comrade. I wonder how much you could have to pay.
Or it could be private.
They are, so Kepler is far, far away. It's 40 million miles outside of Earth's orbit, or in an orbit that's 40 million miles away from Earth, which is a long-ass way away from here. So we can't obviously go out and fix it like we did with the Hubble, because it's a similar problem plagued the Hubble. And that's what that last repair mission that the shuttle undertook was to replace, I think, broken gyroscopes on the Hubble. You okay, Norm? You're making a very weird face.
I was just thinking, how much did the International Space Station cost? Now, the Google graph immediately told me.
It's $20 billion?
It's $150 billion.
Wow!
That's why I made that face. I was like, oh man, I could give up my voice and I have $1 billion. I wonder what I could build in space for $1 billion.
You could get one of those inflatable habitats,
I bet. Nothing. $150 billion.
Is that, that counts the shuttle, the last part of the shuttle missions too, right?
But imagine if you had your own ISS.
Just to be clear, that's half a year
in space
operating costs of the Iraq war, because it was $1 billion a day. So, you know,
it's a cheap space station.
We could have had
Arthur C. Clarke spinning tubes. Did you see that Kerbal Space Program video that Rollier posted in the forums?
No, what happened inside it?
So, do you know what Kerbal Space Program is?
Yes, it's awesome.
Kerbal Space Program is, I don't know how to describe, like, it's
a physics launch simulator.
Spacecraft
launching
physics simulation.
Yeah, but the Kerbals are kind of dim, it seems like.
It's a lemmings, but
space, yeah, lemmings is right.
Well, it fits of space launch.
It fits with the concept that most of the ships you build are going to explode.
Yeah, yeah. You expect a lot of you learn by failing.
They're little green dudes. They look kind of dorky.
Lemmings. Yeah. It's lemmings,
and they're probably going to get blown up.
Yeah. So
a lot.
So you build spaceships, and it started out like a basic simulator of the early U.S. and Russian space program, right? So you could build the equivalent of like Atlas rockets and Redstones and all that. I think the last time I played it, they just put the Saturn V and some of the early shuttle stuff.
Well, there's a lot of mod stuff you can get, and I'm not sure what the, like, what are the official, you know, parts, engine, rocket types and stuff that they have in the game versus what other people have just made that you can just throw in there.
But it's very Minecrafty in that they released it like as a really early alpha that kind of half worked in a lot of cases. And so you assemble these rockets, which you can do as dumb or as awesome a stuff as you want. What
you can literally like use metal bolts to like try to hold them together and just strap like 10 rockets and then put the bolts in. As it takes off, you just see them shaking and you just like, it's only a matter of time.
You can use explosive bolts. It's real good. It's definitely worth it. It was like $15 when I bought it, I think. So highly recommend.
And I think there's a free version, demo version, or at least there was at one point. I think there probably still is.
It plays on my laptop.
Test user Rollier.
Rollier posted a video of a couple of people who had designed an orbital space station, or not really a space station, but just a ring, basically, that they could put a spin on. So it developed centripetal force.
Artificial gravity.
Artificial gravity. And then they put a drone.
As long as you never stop spinning.
Never stop spinning. They put a rover, like a wheeled vehicle, inside the spinning space station and demonstrated kind of the stuff that you saw in like 60s videos of the centrifugal force simulators at, I think, Huntsville or wherever that stuff was done. It's really cool. It kind of made me want to go play Kerbal again, but it demonstrated the Coriolis effect that William Gibson talked about in Count Zero, Mona Lisa Overdrive, whichever one they went to space on.
Well, they go to space in Neuromancer.
Maybe it was Neuromancer then. Was the shiny, the mirror glasses assassin in Neuromancer?
Yeah. Molly. Yeah.
Yeah, so then maybe Neuromancer. But the idea there is that if you're on an artificial gravity induced by spinning, that stuff only works as long as you're going the direction against the direction of spin. Like you always, because if you go toward the spin and the spin is not going significantly faster than you walk, which is what they demonstrated with this video, then you basically float off of the ground. It was really good.
That's why when Dave runs,
he has to go against the spin. Yeah. It's a treadmill. Highly recommend that. It's in the forums. You can find it. What else do we want to talk about? Kepler. So Kepler, it seems like there's a couple articles that were posted today.
Talk about Chris Hadfield landing.
They're thinking
returning to Earth.
They're thinking it's going to get, like, there's still a chance that they could get that the third gyroscope to spin.
So Kepler might not be, might be inoperational, but it hasn't fallen back to Earth yet.
It won't.
But you know who has fallen back to Earth?
David Bowie.
Sokolov.
Our favorite Canadian.
Matt Braga?
Oh, no, he's our second favorite Canadian.
Oh, sorry, Braga, you're demoted.
Astronaut Chris Hadfield.
Roman Romanov?
Returned back to Earth this week.
Roman Romanov is a great astronaut. He's a cosmonaut, I guess.
Cosmonaut.
Yeah. Yeah, did you watch that? I watched the live stream of that. I've never watched that before. Gina and I were sitting
Kazakhstan.
There. You landed in a, the steps. The steppies? Steps? Steps?
S-T-E-P-P-E-S.
Yeah. I had never watched one of those, leading into this, I didn't know anything about how the Soyuz capsules worked, because I read tons and tons and tons about how Apollo worked when I was a kid.
So Soyuz, which is the Russian capsule, they have one docked at all times.
Usually, they have one for each three astronauts on the space station.
On the space station.
Yeah, so there's usually two docked.
Just, it's like, it is their emergency evacuation.
It's the ride to and from the space station.
But there are enough ports that they also sent three more people to replace the three that left.
Yeah, so at this point, there's a ton of docking ports on the space station. There's,
bum 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 bum.
Because they also have like progress capsules and ESA capsules and just Dragon X capsules coming up all the time too. Yeah. So yeah, the Soyuz is like, it's like fifth or sixth generation Soyuz at this point. They've been building them since the '60s. It was their equivalent of the Apollo capsules, and they're completely different in almost every way. The only thing that's the same about them is they're launched on top of a rocket and they land
at the very top of a rocket.
At the very top of a rocket. And they land after parachuting to the Earth. Like that's it. They're three separate, whereas the Apollo had two modules, the command module where everybody sat and had the living space, and you know, everything that was done with humans basically happened in the command module. And then there was a service module that attached behind that had life support systems and rockets and all the stuff that you need to get.
Where they went to for Apollo 13.
No. That's the landing module. That's the lunar excursion module. That's different. So at its core, Apollo is the gumdrop-shaped capsule. The service module, which is the thing that looks like a
Hershey's Kiss.
The Hershey's Kiss is the command module.
Okay.
The thing, everything below that is unmanned. So it's like fuel cells and rocket engines and hydrogen and oxygen and all the stuff that you need to make the rocket fly and keep the people alive in the capsule for as long as they're going to be up. But you can't. The heat shield separates those two things, so you couldn't go through the heat shield. There's no hatch. When they went to the moon, then the LEM they dock the LEM on the cone, the nose cone of the Apollo, of the command module, and then there'd be the little tunnel that you saw in Apollo 13, and that's where they went. They used the LEM as a lifeboat, basically, and also used the LEM descent stage to do the orbital burn to get into orbit around the moon and all that stuff. That's the thing where you saw Tom Hanks, you know, squinting out the window through the mark to keep the edge on the Earth. Soyuz is completely different. Soyuz has the area, the part of, it's three parts instead of being two. There's the life support stuff is on the bottom as well. That's the kind of a conical, a cylindrical thing with a rocket engine on the back. Then there's the gumdrop looking thing, which is what comes back to Earth. And then attached to the top of the gumdrop looking thing is the thing that looks like a big ball. And that ball is also living space, but it gets jettisoned before they come back down. And I didn't know any of this. This was really fascinating to me. It's where, like, the hatch that attaches to the space station or Mir or Salyut or whichever stations they were connecting to went. And it's really tiny inside is the takeaway. So it has more living space when that ball's attached and much, much less than Apollo when the ball's not attached. So they detached from the space station, basically put on pressure suits, climbed into the claustrophobic Soyuz, fired some rockets, blew off the top and the bottom, and then they parachute down on top of land. Apollo landed in the ocean, splashed down.
And this one they parachute on land using atmosphere and to slow your speed down.
Well, that's the way Apollo worked.
And also parachutes, and then firing rockets as you get close to the ground.
But when you get real close to the ground, a handful of inches.
And they're packed in there like sardines.
It looked really tight and scary.
What did the video look like of the rockets firing at the very end?
It looked like an explosion. Like, it looks like it blew up an unbelievable amount of dirt. And so it landed in a prairie looking thing, like a tall grass, kind of a lot of dust. And it looked like an exploding pack on the bottom of the heat shield. By all reports, the other astronauts that they had on the stream were saying that basically when you hit the ground in one of those, it's like being rear-ended at a really high speed by a car that's coming up behind you. Like, it's equivalent to an unpleasant car wreck. And, of course, these guys haven't been in gravity for six months at this point.
They were carried out and put on stretchers.
Yeah, it seemed like they were carried out I don't know if they're carried out because they need to be carried out or because they don't want any astronauts to climb out of the capsules and then immediately eat shit. like, you know, you don't want the returning heroes to come down and end up face down in the dirt because they're not used to standing on their own, sure, on their own gravity. But they definitely looked like they were all real pale. Like Commander Hadfield looked awesome in those videos, but when you put him in the light of the Kazakh sun, they're pasty after 6 months in that station.
And even if they could stand up by themselves, like in the gravity, just the fact that they went through the equivalent of a pretty serious,
like an AG deceleration,
car wreck, like you're going to be a little shaky.
Yeah, probably. It took them a long time to get everyone out. They chase them down with helicopters, basically, and they had footage of the whole thing floating down, more or less. And then the capsule can either land on its end or on its side. And if it lands on its side, then they have stuff to kind of pull it over to, so you can get to the hatch and all that. I think the safest flight. If you look at the number of flights versus the number of accidents, it's safer than anything anyone else has ever done after the initial kind of first waves of space exploration, where we only did limited stuff. But it looked really terrifying. And the space inside is tiny.
Why Kazakhstan?
I assume it has to do with the orbit. And it's probably like I would think you want a big flat area, right? Like you don't want to accidentally land in mountains or places where there's lots of trees or stuff like that. And the grasslands are wide ass open. And same reason we land in the ocean.
Just not as spectacular as a shuttle landing.
Well, but it also wasn't as, you know, the shuttle was the most failure prone thing anybody's ever flown to space. And also kind of expensive and didn't do what it was supposed to do. It's really neat. I love the shuttle, but it wasn't good, really. Did you see the story about Buran?
No, what is that story?
So Buran is the Russians, the Soviets rather, clone of the space shuttle. And it flew, I think, once or twice. It was unmanned.
Clone as in like they, how did they?
Google Buran. And then tell me, didn't describe it to me.
Spell
Buran.
I thought you were giving a really weird pronunciation of boron.
Buran's.
It looks like the space shuttle, except a little more sleeker, actually.
It's a little squattier. Didn't have engines. So you know how the space shuttle has the liquid hydrogen engines on the back? This doesn't have engines there. It uses, I actually don't know how it deorbits, but it was fully unmanned capable. Wow. And I think they flew it a couple of times.
Was it created in cooperation with NASA?
No. It was created at the height of the Cold War and is one of the things that contributed.
Oh, it was a pirated space shuttle.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Buran. Mm. Yeah, it was. It's an interesting story. There was a story, I can't remember what it was now, but just Google it. It's the first thing that'll pop up, the story.
Wow.
Yeah.
Buran.
How did you not know about this?
Yeah.
I'm surprised. Do we want to talk about the Microsoft, Google, YouTube brouhaha? Do we want to talk about Commander Hadfield more?
I think we should talk about Commander Hadfield. He's like the topic of this week.
You know, when they come back from space, mm-hmm. they can't eat for a few days. Like, they feel nauseous and bad.
Well, he tweeted his first meal.
Which was?
Space, which was a sandwich.
Ooh, what kind of sandwich?
With some fruit.
Wheat bread and fruit. Yeah, carrots and...
I'm sure fruit must taste real good.
Like either turkey or ham. Had definitely lettuce in it. He had that like a day and a half ago.
So when they landed, they took him out of the capsule. They were all sitting in like lawn chairs or they were actually like kind of litters, right? Because people had to carry them from there to the medical tent and all that. And then a flight surgeon
came up. They should have gotten
up.
like a throne. Like
that's what it looks like. Dude. It's like
scientists in lab coats on either side carrying.
It was old white guys, not scientists. Well, maybe scientists. I think military guys probably.
Like Xerxes in 300.
Exactly like that.
They should have had that.
Yeah. And then there were scantily clad women there to feed them grapes once they got in the medical tent.
They like the fruit.
They took their blood pressure and kind of were taking heart rates and all that kind of stuff. And then they brought them some coffee or tea, I assume, because they were all drinking like steaming beverages. And they took phone calls from family members and stuff like that. Hey, I'm here, you know, blah, blah, blah.
They do a lot of family calls. Even when they first get to the space station, they do the first, like, celebratory debrief. Like, it's like Hadfield talking to all his sons and his wife. And, yeah, it's a lot of family time.
There aren't many things riskier or at least more worrying to your family than leaving the planet and coming back.
Right, leaving the thin atmosphere that keeps you like when the only thing that's keeping you alive is essentially a school bus wall. You know, think about it. It's cozy. So yeah, I mean, if you're an astronaut's kid and you're watching the live stream because you're not in Kazakhstan. And like they're taking 20 minutes to get the door open. You're shitting bricks. Your dad's the last guy out. That's not good.
No, it's true. Which makes it even worse for a one-way mission to Mars. Like, would you still be in touch with your family?
Well, yeah, of course.
The person who takes the one-way trip to Mars, I think, probably doesn't have much family.
Well,
Hadfield said he'd be honored to do it. Yeah. If you asked him.
Said he'd be honored to do it. Does that mean he would
gonna
really...
It's going to be like in... Contact.
I assume if
the guy
you have,
goes,
yeah, she's a poet.
Don't. No, oh. No. They chose the guy, and then he's like, "My son told me not to do it." He goes, "Dad, don't go." And then that's why Jodie Foster got to go.
They should have. I gotta imagine if you're gonna go for one way, then you take your family.
No, you don't take your family.
Hey, kids, pack it up. We're never coming back.
No.
It's just like in Lost in Space. The William Hurt, John Hurt.
Yeah, that's gotta be a tough conversation.
Matt LeBlanc.
Yeah.
Heather Graham, star vehicle.
Continue.
Hi, family.
CG monkey.
Right. We're never coming back, guys. Was this that monkey with CG, really?
Oh, yeah. Look at screenshots from that movie.
That might have been the first DVD I ever bought, just to put that in context.
I had it on VHS.
It was like one of the first 7 or 10 movies out on DVD.
Which is a real... How did DVD make it? I mean, how did that not just
Braveheart
flat
was
out
also one of the
kill
first.
DVD?
Was it?
Braveheart, The Matrix?
No, wait. Matrix was way before that.
Matrix
way after that
kicked off the.
That was when it started getting big. Yeah. That was when the PS2 came out when Matrix was out.
Matrix and Gladiator both came out around the same time, and that was like a million sales for DVD. Oh my god!
If I bought Lost in Space on DVD, I would have been like,
dude, the picture was amazing.
Fuck this forever.
What were the first dozen DVDs?
I'm trying to find
released?
It.
What was your first DVD?
Braveheart and the Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers was an early one, for sure. Lost in Space was the thing that had the best effects that was out early. That's why everybody bought it. It was like the one that you bought to show off your 5.1 sound system.
Which is funny, because if you look up a screenshot of the monkey from Lost in Space now, you will not believe that is in a movie.
That movie had Joey from Friends and Roller Girl.
Oh, I know. I watched it a lot.
Twister was early?
I think Twister, says Google, is the first... DVD movie released to the public.
That kind of makes sense.
Twister is a hell of a lot better than Lost in Space.
Well, no shit. I mean, that's a low bar, dude. There were like 7 titles that were real early.
Yeah, what were the first?
It was Twister. I want to say Starship Troopers was up there. Lost in Space. There was probably something that was kind of like thinky. You know, Harold and Maude or something like that. Probably not Harold and Maude, but
probably not Harold and Maude.
But like something timely. Maybe Heat came on kind of late. That was real good. That was 2 discs.
Heat was 2 DVDs?
Yeah, because it was a 2-sided, and that was before they. It may have been a flipper. Because remember, for a while it was cheaper to make 2 one-sided DVDs than to make 1 double-layer DVD.
Twister was both the first film to be released on DVD and the last to be released on HD DVD.
The legacy of Twister.
Wow. Wow.
The constant reminder that Bill Paxton was once an A-list movie star.
Bill Paxton, don't talk bad things about Bill Paxton.
I didn't say anything bad.
Yes, you did.
Is he still an A-list movie star?
Wasn't he on Big Love?
That's not a movie.
It's on HBO.
It's
close
on,
enough.
It's not on, isn't it?
Well, it was.
Showtime?
No, it was on it was an HBO show.
Was it?
Yeah, because I don't have Showtime, but we could watch Big Love. It wasn't my thing. Yeah, so I got to imagine that like a hot shower, since they've been using wet naps for 6 months, pretty good. What do you think? So one of the things that was interesting about this to me is that Sokolov, who's the Russian cosmonaut and I think the pilot or commander of the Soyuz mission back, went back to the Yuri Gagarin Training Center while Hadfield and McCulloch, who's the other astronaut that was in there?
I don't know his name.
You know, Michael Collins.
Exactly.
He
at least Michael Collins will be known as the first guy to not have his name remembered. He has that going for him. He's transcendent.
He's the guy who didn't have to come back alone without the landing crew. I mean, you don't want to be that guy.
No.
They parted ways after this. The Americans got on a NASA jet and flew back to Houston. And the Russian went back to the Yuri Gagarin Training Center in Russia. And
waiting for his code word.
I don't think it works that way anymore, man. But you think that there's awkward hugs as they're heading out? They've spent 6 months living together.
They were really they were kind of living together.
Dude, that the space station is small enough that you cannot
live there. Do you still
live
in touch
there
with your first year college dorm mate?
I hear from him every couple of years.
There you go. That's probably how it is.
You think so?
Every couple of years.
You hoist a vodka on his birthday and say, hey, here's to you, buddy.
Exchange patches and...
I got to think that there's some... Russians are big on hugging, right? It's a hugging country. They invented the bear hug. Russians, bears, hugs. I don't know. I got to think that that's the last of the goodbyes, right? It's like leaving... first year roommate. Do you not talk to your roommate?
No.
Really? Did you not get along?
Yeah, I got along all right.
What was the problem?
Sabotage.
You sabotaged him or he sabotaged you?
I was sabotaged.
Oh, by the process or by the roommate?
By the roommate.
By fate.
What did he do? Unplug your mouse when you're playing Battlefield?
No, he broke my DS. And my bass.
Hold on, you had a DS when you were in college?
Yeah.
A Nintendo DS?
Nintendo DS came out
the
my
DS
third
fat.
Year of college.
It's old.
Yeah.
Wow.
It came out when I was in 11th grade, I think.
When did it come out?
2004.
He broke your bass too?
Bass amp.
Why? How do you break a bass amp?
Pulling out wires in the back.
What the fuck?
Yep.
My freshman year roommate just kept a thing of milk in there the entire 9 months we lived in that room and in the dorm fridge. When I took it out, it was like cheese in there. It was solid. And had it all puffed up.
Had it made it to the point where it stopped smelling by any chance?
We never opened it. It was the kind of thing that, it was all puffed up. And when you grabbed it, I was like, dude, this fridge, this is my fridge. But for $50, it's yours. Because I don't want to have to deal
with this. I'm impressed that the seal kept the odor.
It was amazing. It smelled probably a little bit in the fall. But, he didn't do laundry very often, so we'd have never known.
The space shuttle landing videos were not as spectacular as I remember. It's still pretty graceful.
It was a lot of boring. It was a lot of waiting. It took a long time. Because they did those cone circles over Kennedy.
Did you guys see the video of the Navy drone taking off from the aircraft carrier?
Yeah, I went and watched that and then watched Terminator 2 to remind me what mistakes we're making.
Or the stealth.
Which stealth?
Starring Academy Award winner Jamie Foxx and Jessica Biel and I think Josh Lucas.
Hold on. Is that the one where the nuke gets loose over North... and
no, it's the one where there's a...
I'm thinking of
the fourth
sentient plane.
Is an autonomous drone.
Wow, I never saw that. Is it good?
No.
Is it bad and worth watching?
Jessica Biel in it. Come on.
Jessica Biel's been in something that was good, right?
Think real hard. You're not going to have an answer.
The A-Team.
I kind of like the A-Team. I mean, I'm not saying it's good.
I liked the A-Team up until the finale, which I thought totally ruined it because it was crap.
I liked the bit where they did the tank, where they swung the tank. I thought that was pretty good.
They made a really poor transition from cartoony, hilarious ridiculousness with that tank scene, which was just really funny and dumb, to the ending where just all of a sudden all of these... shipping crates are exploding all over the place and the CG looks awful and there was it was just a terribly written and
The
finale.
Ending of that movie is really bad.
Yeah, it's really bad. But everything up until that point is ridiculous, stupid, campy, good action movie
fun. She was in The Illusionist.
That's a terrible movie.
Oh, that's the bad one. It's The Prestige. It's a good one.
Yep.
She was in Total Recall. That was
also
bad.
A bad one.
Yeah.
I don't think that she's really necessarily a bad actress.
She was in Blade 3.
I think she's fine.
Also the bad one.
Yeah. Powder Blue.
That's the one where she's a stripper.
That's probably the best thing in the filmography. She was also in Chuck and Larry, which was offensive on about 15 different levels.
There you go.
Elizabethton isn't bad. I didn't remember her being in that, though, so maybe that doesn't say anything.
Elizabethtown.
Elizabethton. I grew up in a town... near a town called Elizabethton.
Anyway, this Navy drone, which is proof of concept drone.
It's the X-47B, right?
Used to test autonomous landings and takeoffs. It was amazing. It took off by itself from the aircraft carrier. Yeah. Have you ever stood on the deck of an aircraft carrier while it was on water? I imagine.
Not while it's moving, but while it's at dock. Yeah, right, we all have.
When it's moving, I imagine it is not a very sturdy place to stand.
Yeah, but you know how that works, right? they have a piston that's attached to a steam catapult, and that thing accelerates them incredibly fast while they're at full speed, and then they just shoot off the end. The takeoffs are not as difficult as landing. I don't want to take away anything from naval aviators, because they are the hardest of hardcore pilots.
Yes.
But takeoffs are a piece of fucking cake compared to landing.
Yes, landing on an aircraft carrier.
It's three football fields.
I imagine it's the,
in the infinite.
One of the scariest things you could ever do.
They're like, all right, we're going to catch you with a big-ass net.
Yeah. No, no, there's no net.
Don't they have a thing that grabs the wheels?
Four wires.
Yeah.
Wires. Okay.
And there's a hook. So the hook comes down, and you catch one of the wires, and that jams to a stop. If you miss the wire, you die. Like, if you miss the wire, you have a fraction of a second to go back to full speed and fly back off and do a touch and go, or else you're going to stall out and crash into the ocean, like in Top Gun.
And then the aircraft carrier is going to run over you just to add insult to injury.
No, because the aircraft carrier goes upwind, so that you have more wind speed going across the deck.
That it just completes the mental image.
Yeah, pretty much. Dan Amrick has landed on an aircraft carrier before.
He's flown and landed?
He didn't fly the airplane, but he rode in an airplane that landed on an aircraft
carrier. Probably still scary.
Or maybe he just took off.
Game Junket thing?
No, it was... well, it was a game thing. It was, since he works for Activision, they donate Call of Duty money to a veterans charity. They had an event on board an aircraft carrier that was leaving San Diego. And I think he might... Maybe he didn't land on the aircraft carrier. Maybe he just took off. But he basically sailed out with the carrier and then took off.
Not a bad perk.
Fucking terrifying.
I'd do it.
I think going to space is probably safer than that if you look at percentages. Aircraft carrier is the most dangerous workplace. Deck of an aircraft carrier is the most dangerous workplace in the world. Like, I think actually getting the drone out of the...
As can be attested by the guy, the hero of Crisis.
Well, that was a frame rate issue more than anything else. I think getting the drone out of the hangar and all that stuff was probably more of a challenge. You know, the other interesting thing about this drone is that it's not like the Air Force drones. The Air Force drones are remote piloted by a human being.
This one is flown by computers.
This with like supervision. Bats. Yeah. Thought that was interesting. But then they landed on the ground.
Drone sees.
Okay. Open your eyes. Windows Blue will be free. It's 8.1. We know that. It's confirmed now, though. Microsoft and Google have had a brouhaha over the YouTube app in Windows Phone 8. So apparently Microsoft asked for help from Google building a YouTube app for Windows Phone 8, and Google looked at their market share. It's like, yeah, we're going to do something else with our time. And so then Microsoft built it themselves. Google cease and desisted them for violating the terms of service because they're not including ads and a couple of other things. And Microsoft says, hey, if you give us access to the right APIs, we're happy to serve ads. And that's where we left it this morning. I don't know who's right or wrong here. I think everybody's probably being an asshole.
Rich people fighting.
Well, companies, not people.
Yeah, I like Microsoft's response, though.
If you give us the APIs to have ads, then...
No, the actual letter says... what was it like? It started off being very, the YouTube app is one of the most popular Windows 8 apps, and our users...
After only a week.
Our users have given nothing but praise and high ratings for it. Given Larry Page's talks about, you know, negativity on this
openness
Google I.O. keynote, hopefully we can all come to terms with this. It's a very in-your-face
passive-aggressive. Yeah, that whole thing, like, somebody asked me on Twitter this morning who I thought was right and who I thought was wrong, and I said, with something like this, it's basically impossible to tell, because probably everyone involved has been an asshole at one point or another. Because at the same time, Google, the Microsoft internal video that was made as a lampoon of the Chrome ad with the identity thing as part of their internal screw gold campaign leaked, and it's real mean. So everyone involved has probably misbehaved at this point. I don't know. I feel like if Google doesn't want Microsoft to build their own apps using open APIs, if Microsoft probably violated the terms of service, Google probably was an ass about initially building a YouTube app for Windows Phone. But on the other hand, their market share is such that it's probably not worth them spending effort on a Google app, a Google-developed YouTube app for Windows Phone. Speaking of Windows Phone, IDC says that Windows Phone shipments have surpassed BlackBerry shipments for the first time in Q1 2013.
In other words, BlackBerry is really
fucked. Yeah, I guess this is more about BlackBerry than it does about Windows Phone.
Well, when did the Z10 ship? Was it at the beginning of Q1 or the end of Q1?
Financial Q1 or calendar Q1?
Financial is what this... Well, probably calendar for IDC, actually. We're talking about it now.
End.
So then Q2 is the one that really matters.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the first full quarter after the saviors of BlackBerry... I saw one of those in the wild the other day.
New BlackBerry?
The Z10, yeah.
Did you try to photograph it?
No, I didn't really care that much. I looked at it for a couple of minutes. It seems fine.
And if you're a user of BBM, you will soon be able to use BBM on your Android and iPhone.
Because 2008 me is really excited about talking to my wife via BlackBerry Messenger. You know, I have a question for you guys. Why has nobody built an app that mimics the push-to-talk stuff that was on old Nextel phones?
The Sprint stuff?
Sprint Nextel.
Was that on a separate... How did that work exactly?
You pressed a button. You had like a quick list of people in your phone that you put their unique code in for. Okay. And then, or your organization could do that for you.
I know it emulated the walkie-talkie experience.
Yeah, it was basically a walkie-talkie.
Technically, behind it was just like a fast dial on the phone.
No, it wasn't a phone call. It wasn't duplex. It was like a walkie-talkie. You said, Wes, come in. I need you at the main center.
As you press
and
the
then you release the button, and then Wes came back and said, "Oh, okay, I got your call."
You know, I understand functionally how like what it was supposed to emulate, but I'm saying, like, technically behind it was just connecting using the same network connection as a phone call, but as opposed to having to answer the call and dial a number.
You did not have to answer the call. So it may have used the same like frequencies, if that's what you're asking,
yes.
But it behaved differently than a phone call.
Yes.
Like, so you didn't have to answer the phone call if you had made yourselves available.
You need an
for
application
this.
And basically have that connection running nonstop if you're going to use VoIP
Fair
to
enough.
Do that.
Yeah.
They had a really strong advertising campaign for that when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I
remember that being... I don't know how well it sold or anything, but I remember it being seeming like a pretty big deal.
My wife used to carry Nextel phones because of that. I mean, for work. Her work issued phone was always a Nextel phone because they would use that when they were on location or something like that and didn't want to have to. I mean, of course, I guess that was also back when you didn't have unlimited minutes. So it's a little different environment.
I'm sure kids were into it. I mean, kids always loved the walkie-talkie concept.
Walkie-talkie phone's dope.
It's pretty cool.
Walkie-talkies are expensive.
Good ones?
Good ones are expensive.
I don't think I've ever used a good walkie-talkie.
Well, like those FRS walkie-talkies are pretty good.
I've only ever used, like, you know, kids'
toys.
$10 walkie-talkie or whatever.
I used to have this awesome pair of laser tag walkie-talkies that you flip the button, it flipped up like an old-school Star Trek communicator. It's really cool.
Push to talk.
Lumia 928?
It's a new high-end Lumia phone. No longer the candy-coated shell.
Really?
And it only has a 1280 by 768 OLED screen.
Is that, I don't even remember. That's the standard resolution, right? For the current gen.
Yes, for the current gen.
Is it out now?
Soon.
Well, and there's also the Lumia 925, which they announced, which is bigger deal.
Do you think?
Why is that the bigger deal?
Isn't it? I mean, isn't the 925 basically a new model internally?
Are they both? These are both $99, right?
I don't know as much about the 925. Like, the 928 is basically the phone they had in a new body on Verizon.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and I don't know the details on the 925, but I assume it's different in some way. Maybe
I assume since it was smaller, it was the budget version. I didn't really look at it that much. I've kind of written off Windows Phone. I'll be honest. I think that the opportunity for that has passed.
Did you ever think there was an opportunity?
I did. When Android sucked, I thought they had a real huge opportunity, and they blew it with a shitty version of Windows Phone. If they had managed to ship Windows Phone 8 at the time when Android was having fragmentation problems pre-4.0 and had a terrible design that didn't make sense and performance problems and all that, they had a huge opportunity to swoop.
I still see a lot of people with Windows Phones.
Really?
On the streets. Yeah. A lot of people. And you know what? 928 does look really good. It's an aluminum frame, like, aesthetically.
Oh, so it doesn't look like a toy. I like the candy color shells even. Like, I like everything about that phone except for the fact that you can't do any of the things you want to do with
until it. Until they made the phones really big.
Yeah, I think that was what messed it up. Like, it looked good in that, like,
in a small
3.9, you know, 4-inch 3.9 or whatever.
But then they got really big, like thick also.
Yeah.
And
cool,
because
they need LTE back.
It wasn't
right?
that anymore.
Yeah. EA killed the online pass. Microsoft is rumored to be killing Xbox points. Do we know that? Because it hasn't been confirmed yet.
That is, they have not announced it, but I could see them announcing it next week.
With the Microsoft event on Tuesday or Wednesday? 21st, whatever day that is.
I mean,
Tuesday.
They don't use them for Windows Store, right? Like,
you can use your points, I think, in the Windows Store if you have them banked.
But it's not...
In the Windows Store, you use cash.
But yeah. You've never been able to... And even on the Xbox Live, if you're buying... if you're buying videos or if you're buying on-demand games, which are full disc-based games that you can just download, you can pay money for them. So you don't use points. You only use points for arcade, rentals, music. I think that's it.
I think in the interests of them selling more digital goods more simply has outweighed the psychological benefit of psyching people out with this 80, not being
80 points being a buck.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what's really dumb? I discovered this the other day. Nintendo released the patch that adds backcompat virtual console titles to the Wii U. So you can go back and the titles that are available for the Wii U that you have bought on the Wii, you can upgrade for like a buck. So I went and in the first wave of those games was Super Mario World, which is one of my favorite games. It's a great game. I went and paid the buck because I had bought it on the virtual console on probably Wii launch, if I had to guess. But your points that are in the Wii virtual store, in the Wii store, eShop, whatever it's called, don't transfer to the Wii U eShop. So I have virtual...
Even though it's technically the same
fucking
account?
Thing. No, there's no accounts. That's the problem. It's tied to Wii hardware. So what happened is the virtual Wii that lives inside my Wii U thinks it's my old Wii, and the store thinks it's my old Wii. The new Wii has another virtual account that's separate from the Wii virtual account, or a store account that's separate from the Wii virtual account, and never the twain shall meet.
It's basically Nintendo's current ineptitude clashing with their former even greater
ineptitude.
That's
exactly it. Yeah. We're slightly less inept now. Hey, guys.
But the only way they could get to be slightly more inept was to build a totally new system that doesn't work with the old system.
Yes, and they don't throw away backwards.
Because the old system sucked too much to have any kind of forward-thinking design to it.
I mean, in fairness, the old system was at launch. When they launched the Wii, it was not worse than the PS. It was slightly worse than PSN. Than the PlayStation experience with the regards to that stuff.
Maybe the experience of shopping, but the
billing and all that stuff has always been dumb.
And like the limitations they had on on WiiWare games and stuff, like in the low megabytes, how big those games could be.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, and just to be clear, even though Nintendo now makes it easy to buy games for the Wii U and 3DS as like full titles that are downloaded on launch day, basically a lot of the time, you should never ever do that because their official stated policy, at least on 3DS, is that if you lose your 3DS, all of the games that you've purchased are gone.
Nothing is account tied. It's all hardware tied.
Yeah. So if somebody steals your 3DS,
your 3DS.
Yeah. So don't buy tapes, not downloads.
Although I might be wrong, but can't you? Well, I guess you can save stuff to an SD card, but maybe like the valid.
So if you still have the old 3DS, you can port it to the new one. Same thing for Wii's, I believe. Like Wii to Wii U, you can do that. You have to go through the whole process, and it recodes all of the duders, and there's a funny little demo that happens. But you have to have the old one in order for that to work. So if somebody steals yours, you lose it, or it breaks, you're pretty much boned.
Gotcha.
Although if it breaks, they may do it at the factory. I'm not sure. At the repair place, I'm not sure. EA is killing the online pass. I think that this is if you don't play EA games for the last few years, when you have a game that has a multiplayer component, which is pretty much everything from EA, in order to play the online part of the game, you've had to put in a code, which then prevents you from being able to resell that to GameStop. I always get it mixed up.
Electronics boutique.
This was their counter to the used game market, basically. And they're bailing out of it because it's a dumb idea. Putting multiplayer in everything sucks. I mean, they didn't say they're bailing out of it because it's a dumb idea. They just said we're bailing out of it. I assume that they think it's a dumb idea now after annoying people for 3 years.
Steam is now a collectible card game.
It is. I don't understand this. Can you explain this to me? It doesn't make sense.
Are my games the cards? Is Magic one of those games?
Your games provide you the cards. So
what are on the actual cards, though? I assume they're virtual cards.
It is a virtual card tied to, I think, achievements slash things you can do
like time spent
in games to unlock them.
I really wish Valve would stop spending time and effort doing these kind of things and building the community hubs.
Are you going to bitch about
Steam
Half-Life 3?
And do more virtual reality stuff.
Well, I think they're probably doing that.
I'm guessing the dude who can design a customizable card game for Steam probably can't design virtual reality.
It's a Mike Abrash
hardware. Yeah, like slightly different skill sets there.
All right, so explain to me the customizable card game.
I don't know too much about it right now either, but it's launched with, like, I want to say half a dozen games that it supported. Like, obviously TF2.
CSGO, Dota 2.
Right. It's all of Valve's
Portal
games.
2.
And then, like, all Valve games, not all of Valve's games.
Yeah.
And then one other one, and I'm blanking on the name of it. It's like an indie.
Always Forever Hungry, or that one?
That sounds. That's not the name. Something.
It's the one about being hungry. Bring out your dead.
Yeah, like one indie game. And yeah, there are different character cards, just as you would expect from a CCG, tied to various ways to unlock them, and you can trade them with other people. I think they looked at hats and they said, all right, how can we, you know, do more with that idea of people love trading hats and the collectible aspect of that. So I think it could be big. It's like, it's invite only right now, I think, but when you get in, you get some invites, kind of like how Dota works, that you can send to your friends or just to spread it slowly that
perpetual
way.
Perpetual beta.
So if you have a complete set of cards, you can craft them into a game badge. The game badge can be displayed on your Steam profile, but you also earn random goodies like backgrounds for your Steam profile and coupons for DLC or discounts on Steam games. So it's one of those situations, like if you have valuable TF2 or Dota drops, you can then trade those to other people for things that live within Steam, like other games. I know a former Giant Bomb intern, Matt Kessler, people that are associated with him have traded, like, hats for TF2 crap for full games in the past. Because if you have something that's rare, it has value. They're doing really interesting things with like, making money on games.
Well,
at
and
Valve.
The fact that they control the marketplace, so, like, they control every aspect of it, they can afford to and easily give you a 25% off coupon just to encourage you to play more, you know, by encouraging you to play games.
Don't starve.
I like imagining Steam as a physical bazaar from, like, the Middle East. Or
a what?
A bazaar.
There you go.
A bazaar from...
you mean like in Aladdin?
From Aladdin, let's say.
Or The Man Who Would Be King.
Or The Man Who Would Be King.
Or Lawrence of Arabia.
Where some dude's in the corner, you know...
The king and
coaxing a snake, and then
seven brides for seven
cobras,
and then
Spartacus.
We have these dudes all wearing different hats and walking around.
Yeah,
and then
are there fezes there?
Lots of fez hats. Maybe that's like the default
is there a
hat.
Dude with a cobra,
and then every once in a while, all the prices get slashed, and it becomes like a Walmart.
Okay, like they flip the light switch on and the fluorescents come on.
Yeah,
and
then everyone runs around for, like, we only have an hour to buy everything we need. And then they end up with giant bags of stuff they don't need.
Yeah.
And then they're trading stuff.
If anybody wants a copy of Rage, I have, like, four copies of Rage. Thanks, Steam sales.
Yeah.
So is there an actual game that these cards are going to let you play, or is that it's just like for display and trading and stuff like that?
Right.
No. The thing that I was reading about the other day,
though, that would be fucking brilliant.
Well, you know what their promotion is for the international?
If they just made a Magic the Gathering ripoff with those cards,
yeah,
or even something simpler than that, like the Penny Arcade game or any kind of CCG.
You have to play hundreds
game.
Of hours
so
of other games
are
in
spending
order to play
more
this
time in their store than actually playing the games they buy.
Well, they're all about getting people to spend time doing it. Like, one of the things for the international, which is the Dota 2 tournament, is that you buy an item that you get stuff levels up the more time you spend watching Dota matches. So it's not even like they want you playing Dota. They want you watching other people play Dota in the Dota client, and then you get rewards for doing that.
I mean, the moment somebody buys a game because it will because it has cards, because it supports the trading cards, they won.
Like, do you not think that that people already do that for TF2 hats?
Yeah,
I know people
absolutely.
Who bought Sam & Max to get the Sam & Max pre-order TF2 hats.
Absolutely, and this is just another version of that. As soon as games start supporting this, and somebody buys that $10 indie game because it has trading card integration, that's just money, extra money Valve's making.
Well, they did this with the Portal 2 thing too, like the potato. Like the whole potato release game thing that happened with Portal 2, people, I guarantee you, people bought those indie games specifically to do.
I'm kidding.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And did you ever finish Portal 2?
Yes, I'm kidding. Yes.
What happens at the end?
You go to the moon, you shoot the moon. Yes.
Did you look that up online at a Wikipedia entry?
No, I'm not an Anna.
Okay, just making sure.
Let's make it clear. Anna. Could not resist.
Don't talk shit about Anna when she's not here.
I'm saying that, okay, love Anna. I'm saying that this is the one thing. She loves Portal 2 so much, loved Portal so much, that she went and watched the last final levels of Portal 2 because she didn't want to be spoiled. I managed to go an entire year without playing that game, finishing it.
Oh, and so you're saying she watched the videos so that she'd spoil herself rather than be spoiled on someone else's terms?
Because she wants to enjoy the narrative.
Hmm.
And maybe I don't know if like got and, but I took my time and beat the whole thing over the course of over a year and was so delighted at the end by that.
Really? I thought I spoiled it for you.
No, you didn't spoil it for me.
I remember us. I'm pretty sure we were on the podcast and I said something about the moon.
Yeah, and I had to shush you.
Yeah, I guess there wasn't enough context for it to stick. Yeah.
We Nord, Gary and I were just yelling space.
I had no idea
for
what that
months.
Meant.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And it was only like it was like one final, 10-second thing at the end. As a part of a QuickTime event, so not a big deal.
I don't think it was a QuickTime event, was it?
Well, it was more like it was scripted, and then you had
a thing you had to do, I guess.
You had to shoot.
Okay.
Like, oh, make it a connection.
Fair enough. NASA and Google are building a quantum computing lab for AI research. That's pretty much what I understood. I read that whole press release, and at the end, my mouth was kind of open. I was like, huh?
Quantum computers.
Does that mean, if it's a quantum computer, does that mean that like you just put the program in and it spawns an infinite number of universes, and then you come back to the one that it has the right answer?
No, that's not science fiction.
Oh. So how does a quantum computer work, Norm?
I don't know, because I'm not a quantum physicist.
Tiny bubbles.
I think the big advantage is that unlike a transistor that always has a binary 0 or 1,
it's either on or it's
on off state.
Yeah,
the quantum elements can be both.
Speaking of things that sound like science fiction, this week, and this is not technology related, not really.
You're going to talk about YouTube launching paid channels?
No, although that is on the list. And here's the thing that YouTube is doing.
Science fiction.
Holy cow.
YouTube, you can, if you are a partner on YouTube, like UFC and maybe MLB, you can start charging monthly subscriptions.
Can I make a paid channel?
Content. You can.
The Will Smith channel?
The Chloe Bananas channel.
I'm just going to talk to the camera.
I bet there will be plenty of paid channels where people pay $5 a month or $5, $10 a year to get exclusive access to Maru and cats.
$1 a month.
Boo.
$1 a month Chloe Cam.
Oh, that's interesting.
You could make some money on that.
I think the way to do this is go the other side.
10 hours of Chloe a month.
I think you do $50,000 a month, and you look for one really good subscriber. You just want that one guy. The one guy who loves you so much, he's going to put $50,000 a month at it.
That's
one way to do it.
Yeah.
Speaking of science fiction, this week,
YouTube paid channels.
The big TV networks announced their upfronts.
Ooh.
And what this means is in the fall, typically there is pilot season.
Yeah.
So the networks all divvy out some cash to production companies who've pitched TV shows to shoot a pilot. And
hold on. Like, you mean like an airline pilot?
No, like the Pulp Fiction pilot.
Oh. Wait. Oh, Fox Force 5.
Yes.
Got it.
And a...
catch
this
up.
Week, there's a thing called Upfront, which is the presentation of the pilots they've picked up, and they've produced several minute-long trailers for all the shows that they are going to start debuting
you know, next season, in the fall, the mid-season.
So does, like, Netflix and Amazon, do they this kind of stuff too?
They did, but it's on their own schedule.
Okay.
So this is mostly for advertisers. Like, Netflix did.
Oh, they don't have advertisers. Okay, got it.
Right. And you can watch all these trailers online.
Ooh.
I spend a lot of time watching them. And there are many science fiction shows coming out. Are you watching an Awesomeyes video on Google Plus?
No, but it was probably kind of the same thing.
Wow, God damn it. Pay attention, Chan.
There are several science fiction shows coming up this this fall. One is called...
Why are there science fiction shows all of a sudden?
I think that we're back in a resurgence of networks believing that there is money in science fiction.
Oh, wow.
Because of the moderate success or genre shows, success of things like True Blood, AMC's The Walking Dead, Eureka, Warehouse 13, Green Arrow,
Fringe.
And all that stuff. Fringe, sure, Fringe is ending. So Fringe, which is produced by J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot Company, the showrunner for that has a new show called Almost Human. And get this premise.
Oh, this is Amy, what's her name? No, she's the writer for Fringe. Sorry.
In the near future, cops have mandatory assignments, so their partners are robots.
Ooh.
And Carl Urban, whom you may know as
Judge Dredd.
And Lord of the Rings.
And McCoy. And
McCoy in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Plays a cop.
A good cop with nothing left to lose.
Except what he did lose was his limbs in an accident where a robot refused to save him and his friend because they had a small percent chance of living. So he is very skeptical of the robot partner, but he is assigned a robot partner he doesn't like.
This sounds really familiar to me.
Kind of like that movie iRobot.
I was going to say
kind of like Automata.
Yeah, I was going to say it's kind of like Automata. It's also kind of like Warren Ellis's new book, Gun Machine.
And the robot he's assigned is one of the earlier models who has more personality.
Is the robot racist?
No, the robot's black, though.
So he's racist, though.
He is very racist.
He's robotist.
Robots. Yes.
Also very
That's
close
one of the shows.
To the plot of Osamu Tezuka's Metropolis has a detective robot combo.
I think it's all those influences in a serialized TV show.
Influences, eh?
Likelihood that this show will succeed?
I don't know.
I'm going to give it 70%, mostly because it's a showrunner Fringe. And
you're making predictions.
Urban. Another show.
Carl Urban's a big pull for TV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's a movie actor.
He's a Kevin Bacon TV actor. Pull for the following. Here's another show.
Okay.
It is... from the writers of Star Trek and Transformers and Cowboys and Aliens.
Great writers. Just great.
Roberto Orci and
Alex Kurtzman. How was Cowboys and Aliens? I never saw that. I
never saw it either.
Supposed to be
This great. Is a TV show set in modern day in the town of Sleepy Hollow.
Wait, you mean where Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder live?
Or Christina Ricci? Hollow.
Where Ichabod Crane wakes up from a 250-year-old sleep to fight the Headless Horseman, who, twist, was actually one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
So it's Darksiders meets Sleepy Hollow.
And the Headless Horseman, Karen Machine Guns.
I like Ichabod where this
Crane
is going.
Sent under deep sleep under the order of George Washington.
Is Michelle Rodriguez a secret order in this?
To save the world.
I can't wait for the Rip Van Winkle crossover.
twist. Ichabod Crane is Rip Van Winkle.
Oh, shit.
There you go.
That sounds terrible.
You have jokes like, what's that? That's a Starbucks. But there was another one right over there. That's a lot of...
Fish out of water is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So here's... Does he speak old-timey?
He does.
And yay, verily, this Starbucks
joke
is...
where some guy in the police station goes, what's the deal with Captain America over there? And then Ichabod Crane goes, who?
So hold on.
So it's amazing that they could have made a terrible 2-hour movie out of this, and instead they decided to make an even worse
percent chance that this
series.
Show will last many seasons, more than one season. I'm going to say 30%.
So this is we should blame Once Upon a Time and Grimm for this, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
And Once Upon a Time has even now a spinoff called Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. Alice in Wonderland.
Some other time in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Have you watched any of those shows?
No.
Yeah.
One of them is supposed to be good.
Another show? This one is more like a supernatural style, not less science fiction.
Like X-Files?
Kinda. But also serialized. A boy is rescued. It comes out of nowhere. And an 8-year-old boy, and he is sent to the FBI. They don't, no one knows where he came from. He won't talk or anything. And an FBI operative uncovers some clues and finds out this boy might be from this small town. So it takes him to the small town, and then the boy points to a house, and they go up to the house.
And he's Rip Van Winkle.
They knock on a door, and they show the owner of the house, do you know who this boy is? Have you seen this boy? Picture goes, do you have a son? He goes, yeah, I have a son, but he died 32 years ago.
Okay.
And yet the boy,
I'm sold,
is 8 years old still.
So he's 40 years old?
And doesn't remember what happened. I think that was a ripoff of another a movie.
That was a ripoff of a Twilight Zone episode, dude.
It was definitely a movie.
The movie was probably the ripoff of a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, and the Twilight Zone episode actually ripped off The Outer Limits, which ripped off some radio drama from the 30s.
So plenty, and these are only like the genre shows. There are plenty of like...
Two out of three of these sound bad.
They're all the comedies. Oh, here's a show that's over the entire season.
Yeah.
It's actually one night at a bar where 10 people meet and hook up and find love, and it's called Mixology.
Fuck. Man, these pilots write themselves.
The entire season, the concept is one entire season is one night.
So it's like 24.
I actually really like that idea.
It's a good idea.
And different perspectives, and like everyone has a backstory, and then it all comes together.
I think that's a really cool idea, but
what it's
about, maybe not so much.
Hey guys, it's Friends meets Cloverfield.
Because that's actually pretty close to how Lost worked in the first couple seasons. I mean, obviously the time scale was extended, but it was very much a compressed period of time, and half an episode was backstory on somebody's life, and then half was in the present.
And, of course, all this leads up to the announcement of 24 coming back next year.
But it's really going to only be 13.
12 episodes.
And Norm is psyched.
I am psyched.
Jack Bauer, Power
Hour. As long as there's Jack Sack that he runs around and says, and there's a damn it counter, that's all I need.
I really liked the first like 3 or 4 seasons of 24, and then I completely lost interest.
All right.
And Norm likes the later seasons more.
Really?
I love the later.
The last season was pretty good. Last season wrapped it all up nicely.
We're gonna watch some of them. I don't know which seasons, but I've only seen.
Skip the one with the cougar.
I saw season two when it was on.
Yeah,
and I saw most of it, but I hadn't seen season one, and then I watched a bit of the third season and just never watched it again.
Season one has too much Alicia Cuthbert. Season three is the peak.
There are no all good seasons of 24.
Season three is all good. Heroin Jack Bauer. Fantastic.
That is a good, three is a hardcore season.
Isn't that the one with the biological weapon release too, in the building in L.A.? It's fantastic.
That's the season after that.
Oh, that's four. Are you sure?
Yeah. Three is after he goes undercover, and then is an addict. Four is the one.
Once they started killing people and bringing them back to life and killing them again, I'm out. Do you still watch How I Met Your Mother?
No.
Fuck no.
Apparently they revealed who the mother was.
Who is the mother?
I don't know. I don't watch How I Met Your Mother anymore. I wanted to find out.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know who the mother is.
I think they're wrapping it all up nicely.
It has at least another season
to
go.
Who is the...
Yeah.
Well, the weird thing is like just they...
How I Met Your Mother.
They basically put her in... They planted her in an episode way earlier that was like, if this was not the mother, then it was bullshit. Because the scene was so... It was done so deliberately and connected so well to so many.
I thought that was the girl from the OC, though.
There's a girl he bumps into in a bar one night, and they like linger on her for a second, and he's like, "Oh, sorry," and like you see her and everything, and then that's the bar that he gets her umbrella
that's
from.
Awesome.
Norm's back
in. I don't want to spoil, but the actress was an actress on 30 Rock, and I remember her. She was really funny on 30 Rock.
I think when they finish the show, I will power through the rest of it. But I stopped watching like a season and a half ago, maybe even more two and a half seasons back, because it just got just not very funny and kind of sad and formulaic.
Ha! Get this. The last season of How I Met Your Mother, the entire season, will take place entirely over the course of one wedding weekend.
How long is the season?
23 episodes.
Really?
There you go.
Each episode's an hour.
Wow.
It's compressed. It runs at double speed. I think that wraps it up. Somebody made a burger out of stem cells. It cost $350,000. It's not for eating. It's to see. It's a test for vat-grown meat, basically. It's supposed to be delicious. Would you eat a vat-grown burger, Norm?
Give me 20 years.
What's the grossest thing you've eaten, Norm?
I don't know.
If you were on Survivor and had to do the food challenge, would you make it or no? Could you eat shipworms?
No. Nope.
Wes, what's the grossest thing you've eaten?
Probably nothing that gross. I don't know.
Have you eaten snails before?
No. Snails are delicious.
If they're cooked, if they're prepared properly.
If you cook anything that much garlic and butter, it's bomb. Yeah.
But yeah, anything with that much garlic and butter is delicious. I really don't like frog legs.
Really? That tastes like chicken.
I don't like to.
You don't even with the skin, dude. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to play some music, and then we're going to talk briefly about what we've been testing. Hey, Norm, what have you been testing? You wrote down Moo business cards.
That was me, actually.
Oh, Wes. Hey, Wes, what have you been testing?
Well, I've been testing Moo business cards.
Fascinating. How are they?
So you guys ordered some cards from Moo a few months ago? Late last year, even?
Yeah, but our business cards are Moo printed.
Did you guys do a post about that on the site?
Nope,
I remember.
No.
Okay. I remember you doing some stuff about printing
letterpress.
Letterpress was what it was. I thought this might have been tied into
No, I have two sets of business cards.
Yeah,
and we have good business cards and Chud business cards.
Right. So anyway, Moo is pretty cool in that you can print as many different images as backs as you want. And so you could have 200 cards, each one unique, and then the front.
Gotta collect them all.
The front obviously has your regular information on it.
What if you don't want people to know your information, Wes?
Why would you give them a business card, Will?
I just want them to know how cool I am.
So just your name?
Give them money.
I don't even think about my name on there. I just put a stylized representation of myself.
So I did this with Moo and got a bunch of the old Soviet space art that I'd collected, and we put a few of them up on Tested last year in one of the stories I did, and I went back and found tons and tons of these magazines and found a bunch of cool images and made cards with those, and they looked really awesome, but I messed up and was extremely stupid while I was going through this process, apparently, and I had their template saved in my Photoshop file when I was making it to make sure that my text wouldn't be off the edge of the card or anything, and when I put it in their editor, I hadn't deleted that layer, and even though it was on the bottom, there was like some transparency issue, and I thought I was just seeing their guidelines in the UI, but I actually printed all my cards with their template visible, printed on the front of my business card that says
template here.
It has like
the line,
has the border around it, and it has like, please make sure that your font is such and such size.
Oops.
And everything. Oops. So I emailed them and I was like, okay, I totally messed this up. Is there any chance, this is my fault, is there any chance I could get a discount on like a reprint? And they said, we'll print some for you for free.
Oh, wow.
So
theoretically they should have caught that, right?
I guess. I don't know if they look at your images before you print them. Like, I don't know that that's their
Tiny Prints says for $3 we'll look at your card design for you and proof it and make sure it's smart.
I don't think they
I don't
had
know if they do that.
Yeah, I don't think they had an option like that. If they did, I didn't.
Do you have any samples here?
I do, but not.
We don't have a camera.
Yeah. But I did bring some with me. I'll show you.
I'd love to
show you
them
later.
Yes.
So shout out to them for awesome customer service.
And they
have
to use
those cards.
Do you
have any other ads you'd like to
for me? I got some new coming out on Wirecutter.
Okay.
Probably soon.
I know. I meant any other products you want to endorse or anything on our podcast.
I will endorse.
I'm just giving you shit, Wes.
Samsung optical Blu-ray drives.
Really?
External.
That was the winner of the great Blu-ray drive showdown of 2013.
Winner. It wasn't that great. It was kind of a small showdown.
Still an optical drive.
But yeah, it was solid.
Can you do anything neat with it? Can you like plug it into your iPad and watch DVDs?
You can plug it into your TV.
With HDMI or USB?
USB.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what kind of TVs?
Well, certainly Samsung TVs.
Well, obviously.
The TV has to support the file type.
Okay.
So I'm guessing it probably has to be a smart TV, pretty recent.
Okay. You also put on the list Google Now iOS plus jailbreak, which I've been doing for a while, but so, I do it a little different way than you do, I think.
Yeah, so you, I'm guessing, have like the triple tap?
I triple tap and Google Now pops up, and I know that I'm 21 minutes from home.
So I was searching last night and saw a link to someone saying basically replace Siri with that, and so I downloaded a Sidey app. Let me see what the name of it is. It's called Now. Yeah. And you can set the activation method for it. And there are tons of options, double press, long hold, triple press, etc. And I set it on short hold, which is how you activate Siri. So when I do a short hold, it just brings up Google Now, and I can say weather, Google search.
Okay, Google.
So I actually used this in the past, but I turned it off because I actually found I'd rather have something that brings up Google Now rather than Google Voice Search. Because what I found is if you set... we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but I don't think you were here. One of the things I have installed, I'll tell you in just a sec what it is. I want to say it is Maps Opener. If you install Maps Opener... he put the bag out there. I'll grab it. If you install Maps Opener on your phone, then basically what happens when you want to open a map, like when you, it sets Google Maps to be the default Maps app for whatever, which means that when you ask Siri to navigate to someplace, it opens it in Google Maps instead of an Apple Maps, which is really all I wanted because I like being able to text with my voice. And then I triple tap to go to Google Now. Does it now?
Different strokes.
Different strokes.
Different folks.
Yes.
Was there a question there?
No, we were just talking.
Like what?
Sup?
Well, you started to ask about Now, and then
It didn't work very well for me. It was real slow. Getting the Google Now voice set up was really slow compared to the Siri launch, which is why I changed it off.
It seems instant to me.
Does it work when the phone's locked?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Weather.
Oh, that's nice. Okay.
And since I haven't ever used, really just haven't used Siri, obviously there are things you can do with Siri you can't do with
text messages.
Right. Like for now, anyway, this is just voice search.
Yeah.
And I never really use voice search either. And I don't know that this will make me start. I was kind of just messing around with it. But the fact that you can replace Siri with it with a Sidey app is pretty cool. And it comes up super, super quick. And the only time that it's kind of jank and doesn't work is if you're in the app and
already.
Then you do the long press and then it'll pull up Siri.
Okay.
But that's the only.
So hit your home button first before you go to sleep.
I'm a pretty big fan of using Google Voice Search for stuff that is longer than I want to type in on my phone keyboard. Like that's where I use Google Voice Search more than anything else.
Probably. Yeah. So I'm going to mess around with it some and see if Google Now is useful for me day to day.
Yeah.
If I know it would be if I had more calendar stuff and planned things, but that's not like a big use case for me. So
yeah.
We'll see how useful it is.
Cool. And we have gone crazy long today, so I'm going to do this.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
It's, you know, we don't do emails, we do
emails.
No.
Questions.
Boom.
If you have a question for This Is Only Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Keep the questions short, under 45 seconds, and make sure it doesn't sound like you are recording from the end of the climactic battle in The Dark Knight, where, you know, the Joker drives an 18-wheeler and Batman's Tumblr gets all jacked up, because we won't be able to hear it, and I'm not going to run it. You can also send a written question if you would like. Here is our first question.
Hello, Tested crew.
Hello.
This is Ben in West Hartford, Connecticut.
Hi.
West Hartford is the home of Noah Webster, a pioneer of secular education and the creator of what became the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. I was recently playing Ticket to Ride with my wife, and I successfully ended the game with a very risky final turn. I left myself open by connecting my entire east-to-west route with the critical path that required every single train I had left. After the game, I brought up that she didn't take the opportunity to block my final crucial turn, and she hadn't even noticed it. So she hadn't actually made the moral decision not to stop my route. My question is, when you play board games with significant others, do you play dirty or do you take the high road?
This is a good question.
I feel like the first 15 seconds of that question, every one of the things he said could have been turned into a double entendre.
Even the last 15 seconds.
I like to play dirty.
Take the high ground or
play
take the high ground.
Who doesn't like the high ground? You know what I mean, guys. In my house, we play to win. So I don't know about you guys.
Huh? That's what you're going to teach your daughter, right?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Winner. If you don't win, don't come home.
Tiger dad.
I think it's situational.
When you were a child and you were playing games with your siblings, did you guys go easy on each other or did you play to win?
You learn strategy.
Yeah. So you would go easy on somebody? Let them win?
I think it's situational.
Strategically, in the bigger realm of things, outside of the board game, that would allow me a bigger win elsewhere.
So you're saying if you think it's going to prevent you from getting laid, you'll throw the game.
With his siblings?
Thanks, Wes. That was good. Norm is not answering.
You take bigger board games or just board games?
See, give it some time. So pretty soon, you know, the board games
are all that matter.
That's what you got.
All right.
No, you shouldn't. You don't ever pull back on. Everybody should earn every victory. There's no such thing as a free ride.
That's how I always played Risk.
There's a big difference between playing dirty and playing fair. And a big difference between.
I'm not suggesting you cheat.
Well, exactly. So there's. Playing dirty and taking the high road are not the opposite ends of the spectrum.
Right.
It's playing fair and playing dirty.
Taking the high road and playing dirty are opposite ends of the spectrum. Taking the high road is the opposite of playing. Playing dirty is
winning at all costs.
Yeah.
But cheating. Dirty is also cheating.
No, dirty is...
Yeah.
Okay. So...
Dirty is not fair.
So then...
Well, playing dirty is like when you play...
I guess taking the high road and playing it all, winning at all costs are the opposite ends of the spectrum. You're correct.
I want to play fair, but not...
You're not going to give any freebies. Do you play to lose?
No, don't play to lose. Play to win, but also play fair.
Playing dirty is like when you play Monopoly and you never point out when someone has landed on somebody's property because
it's not my fault.
It's on them.
It's on them to pick it up.
To get that money.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to squeeze by, it's not the most fair way to play, but it's legit.
Do you play Kirk or Spock?
It's within the rules.
Play Kirk. Kirk wins.
We always played.
Kirk plays dirty.
Risk. Super
Kirk
cutthroat.
Always plays dirty.
Which is probably why no game of Risk I've ever played with friends ended happily.
No, I've never had a successful friend. Like I've lost friends over Risk games before.
It just ends with everybody pissed.
And like I don't think I'm playing that Game of Thrones game ever again either because that's ended badly both times I've played it.
Well, I think the way you won was totally fine.
Yeah,
I was totally okay with that. I think the issue was more the group's investment in it, and your victory came at a cost of being a total shit for 2 hours.
It wasn't 2 hours. It's only like an hour and a half. Maybe.
It was 4 hours.
It was a 4-hour game, but I was only a shit for the last third, probably. yeah. Ticket to Ride. Gina and I have had arguments about Ticket to Ride before because the cock blocking somebody's route at the last minute is a profoundly but part of the strategy of that game, as I see it, is that you should try to obfuscate your route.
Do you have a saying that you say at the end of when you win dirty or when you win?
No, I've never.
You should have a saying like tough or you know
them's the breaks.
Yeah, them's the breaks. Clean up.
Maybe you'll learn more next time. Can't wait to get Candyland. We're going to teach that kid some lessons. But part of the strategy of a game like Ticket to Ride is obfuscating your route. If you are in a situation where you can't obfuscate what route you need, then you've messed up, right?
You've done fucked up.
Yeah. You brought this on yourself. It hurts me more than it hurts you.
When playing
dad mode shit,
complex games with people who are relatively new to them, I am often okay with telling them when they should do something that's strategically useful to them that I could otherwise totally fuck them over.
That is a completely different situation, though. If you're teaching somebody a new game, then it's a different set of rules because then you're basically what you're doing at that point is planting a garden because you are trying to develop these people into people you can play this game with in the future.
So that you can then eat them later.
Right. They're the carrots. But no, you want to teach them, and if you don't do a good job of imparting strategic stuff to them, then they're not going to be fun to play with. Like I want to play with people who can challenge me. Yeah, I don't want to play with people I'm going to steamroll all the time. That sucks. Or vice versa, I don't want to get steamrolled all the time. That's no fun either. Which is why we don't play Power Grid in my house anymore because I'm really fucking bad at Power Grid.
Noted.
Yeah, there we go.
You want to be the Sacha Baron Cohen of board games.
I don't know.
Talladega Nights.
No. I just want to... Oh, yeah. He's a good sport. Right? He wants to be challenged. He wants to beat the best of the best.
He wants the best. To challenge him.
Yeah. I want to have a challenge. I want to have fun.
All right.
And that'll do it for us this week, I guess. We have space videos. The first one went up today, finally. We had a little bit of a delay, but everything's good now.
I'm not going to call it Space Week.
It's not Space Week anymore. It's just Space Videos.
The videos might say Space Week, but...
That's because we uploaded... Better. Yeah, mistakes were made. The first one, we talked to a wonderful woman named Vicky Claris, who is the who's in charge of the food that the American astronauts eat on the space station. And
the European astronauts.
Some of the European... No, they don't provide the European food.
Everything but...
Russians.
Russians and the Japanese, I believe.
The Europeans bring their own cans.
So remember, it's Canadians.
Canadians, America.
North America.
American supplied USA. Team USA. We had a fascinating talk with her. She gave us a little bit of the history of space food. And then Norm got to eat a bunch of space food. And I also came back and tasted it later, but we didn't put that in the video.
It's good space food.
It was fascinating.
I haven't had any freeze-dried ice cream for like 15 years.
It's pretty good. I bought some because a few months ago I was like...
Freeze-dried ice cream is not pretty good.
Wrong.
Freeze-dried
Wrong.
Ice cream... I like ice cream
Wrong.
To be cold, and freeze-dried ice cream is not cold.
Wrong. Well, I mean, no, you're correct. It is not cold, but it tastes delicious.
Nah.
It tastes like my childhood. Freeze-dried strawberries are the bomb, though.
Those are good.
Yeah.
I just don't think freeze-dried ice cream...
What about freeze-dried strawberry ice cream?
That would be sounds good to me.
That's the only kind I've ever had, I think.
No, it's usually Neapolitan. It's black, white, and pink.
Maybe. Yeah. I remember the strawberry part.
See, I remember the chocolate
part. It was the expensive stuff at the science gift store.
Yes.
That you could buy, but it gave you the illusion that they made this astronaut ice cream for astronauts, and these were the extra, like the MREs.
They didn't have astronaut ice cream on the menu when we talked to Vicky.
They did not.
No. They just called it ice cream. Did you ever try to save the astronaut ice cream? Like, you'd open it and eat like half and be like, I'm going to save the rest for later?
It's gross.
It doesn't work.
I don't remember. Yeah. Probably not.
I was a saver. I'd like squirrel it away like a little squirrel. So space stuff on the site. We have something really special planned for tomorrow. Dave Chang makes a return appearance, so you should check that out. And then we'll have some more stuff on Tuesday. We're going to Maker Faire this weekend. Maker Faire.
Robots.
I went this morning and got a little bit of a sneak preview, and there is a ton of good stuff again. I got to talk to one of the Arduino co-founders. That was pretty cool. We will have a whole bunch of Maker Faire stuff starting probably middle of next week, if I had to guess. There'll be another space video with Tracy on either Monday or Tuesday, probably Tuesday, I would guess. And we'll do our best to have Adam's talk from Maker Faire, his keynote from Sunday morning. By the way, if you're at Maker Faire and you want to see Adam give his keynote, it's at like 10:30 or 11 on Sunday morning.
11 o'clock, but you probably have to get there.
You want to get there a little early.
Before 10:30.
Yeah. We are not doing a meetup because Maker Faire is a crazy busy weekend for us. We'll be there humping all day, we're just working really hard all day, both days. That's it, pretty much, I guess. I'm excited. If you have stuff you want us to see, send us Twitter messages with like directions to where it is. If you see stuff you think we'd be into, because we always welcome that kind of stuff. And I guess that'll do it for us this week. Next week, Still Entitled will feature us telling Adam about our trip to Johnson Space Center, where we met Vicky and other people. Is that it?
That's it.
Anything else?
No.
Call it.
See you guys next week on another edition of... Oh, there's no camera. We'll see you guys next week on another edition of This Is Only a Test. See you next Thursday. Today's outro is from KJN.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Test it.
If you wear cargo pants, sure, this will fit cargo pants. You should not be wearing cargo pants.
Good advice.
Test it. Good advice.